All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to our Monday night conference. Got quite a few things to report or talk about or get moving on. I guess we'll start with just a bunch of simple things that we all need to think about and move on. For those who don't know that we also have a meetup group, you can join our meetup group. I got it up on the screen here right now. By clicking the button on the top right side right here, it says join our national meetup group. And if you click on that, you'll go to our meetup page. We are setting up a new site. I know we keep talking about it, and it's still a little ways away. And until we get funding, we're not going to really get it up. But we may have funding very soon, and then we'll be able to do what we have to do. And we're in the process of building a site. It's just moving slow. But as soon as we get funding, it'll move a lot faster. I think once we get funding, we could probably get it up in about a week. We're planning on getting a lot of hits over the course of the next couple of weeks on our website. We did do a program, a radio program. It was a blog program, and we got a lot of people that responded from that. We had, in the course of just a couple hours after that program and during that program, we had over 1,000, maybe 1,200, 1,500 additional hits than what we normally have. And so that was, pretty good to see something like that. We also had an additional about 130 people, new people, sign up over the course of the next 2 days after that program. So that was a very good program for us. It was something Drake's. Trod, do you remember the name of that? We did post the, let me see.
No, I don't. I didn't even look. I just happened to come in last minute there.
Yeah, if you go to, I think we put, oh no, we put it on our breaking news page because it was sort of a radio interview. And let's see, it was Blog Drake Talk Bailey. Radio with Drake Bailey, interview with John Durash. And so anybody that wants to listen to that interview, it's there. I think it was a pretty good interview. The people listening in, I guess, thought it was a pretty good interview because, again, we got a lot of hits and we also picked up a lot of new members. So we're growing pretty fast. We do have a couple of a couple of the radio shows we're going to be going on in the next week or so. And we have one we may be going on to try and make contact, which is a very large program and should really start to move us. Also, as we start to get out into the news, that's when all hell's going to break loose, so to speak. We can, right now the service, the web service we use, is not capable of dealing with what may happen. Well, what will eventually happen, which will get a large rush of people coming onto the site, and the broadband will go crazy and the site will probably crash. Hopefully we'll be able to move the site over to the new place before that. Even if we keep the site we have, it only took a couple hours to move this site here from one server to another server, so it doesn't take too long to do that. And then we can, again, get funding is the key part to that. And getting the funding will allow us to get the other website built a lot quicker. I think we can pretty much get it up inside of a week. That website will combine our meetup page. We won't need meetup anymore. It'll be all inside of that one website. But until then, we do use meetup. We use meetup to get a lot of, some information out. And, we notify people of the meetings. There's sort of like autopilot on that. If there are elections somewhere in around the nation, if they notify us, we post it and people will know it. And people in that area can go and attend it. And, of course, people can meet people on this website from their own county. You know, if you go over to the members area, for instance, and you put in a county, let's see, I'll put in Dutchess. Okay, Dutchess County. And as you can see, these are all the people in Dutchess County. And you can make contact to these people. you can send them an email and get some conversation going and start working a plan with each other, other people in the county. So this meetup is nice for that. You can make direct email contact. But the key thing and the reason why we use this is because of the calendar. They really have a meetup has a really good calendar, and so we post whatever's going on this calendar, and it's all automated and sends out the information and reminders. So anyway, anybody who has not joined the meetup, click on Join Our National Meetup top right. Now, we have a lot of new members also that have come in. Anybody who's not aware of it, they can join our registry, top left side, register as a jurist in your county. And when you register as a jurist in your county, you'll come to a page where you have to fill out the registration form. And one of the questions they ask is, do you want to become a county organizer? And if you click yes, then your name will show up with your phone number on the county organizers page right here. You'll be able to, let's say, click on a particular state. We'll click on New York. It's been a while I clicked on New York, see how many people we have that's registered as a leader here in New York. So if you click on New York, right now we have 83 leaders. We have over 200, actually. There's quite a few people in the background that haven't put their names up here. And there are some other people that are involved and really just even haven't registered yet. We've got to push on them. So we do have a lot. We have quite a few people who have registered on our site. With the numbers, I think we're, I don't remember exactly where the numbers were at, but 1,200, somewhere around there, maybe even more than that. Those are the people that sign up. We have a lot more people that haven't signed up. Okay. So for that, for every 1,000, we may have 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people working this process across the nation. And so that's a lot of people. And we need to keep, telling people what's going on. Now we still have two states holding out. Vermont is one of them. We have nobody in Vermont. If anybody knows anybody in Vermont, make some phone calls. Get them out to our website. Get them on our front page. Have them watch our video and see once and then follow up with them, see once what they think, if they're going to join up. The other state is North Dakota. We have nobody in North Dakota. So if anybody knows anybody in North Dakota, other than that, we do have a presence in every state. Another thing is down on the bottom here below looking at the organizers, you click here to find your state organizer. Okay, so anybody that's new, you need to go find your organizer on this page, make contact with that person, and work with them to connect with all the other county organizers throughout your state. United we stand and divided we fall. You have to connect with your counties and come together and organize together. Your work is done on the grassroots level, and all your decision-making is on the grassroots level, but you have to work together with the rest of the counties within your state, just like we also have to work together, all the states, at some point, and like right now, really, organizing in itself is working together. Now, we have some states here still that we have not got a state organizer. Anybody that would like to be a state organizer, send me an email. Send it to john@nationallibertyalliance.org. That's John, J-O-H-N, @nationallibertyalliance.org. And just give me your name and your state and your phone number. Those are the three items I need, and I'll add you in on the list. Of course, before you do that, you want to make sure that you have been registered as a jurist in your county. And then send me your name. Anybody that has a problem registering, we still have a problem from time to time. I don't know, maybe it's 1 out of 100 people or something has a problem signing up, and they can't seem to get past the state. It must be something with cookies in their, on their browser or something. I don't know. But anybody has a problem, all they have to do is send an email to support@nationallibertyalliance.org. And someone will help you. Carl's answering that, and Gerard may be answering some of them too. But basically, if you send them the information that is asked for in the registry area, if you can't get, you know, registered, Carl will get your name into the system, and he'll notify you by email that you've been placed into the system. But state leaders, let's talk about state leaders. And we have some very interesting news we're going to share tonight, but I just want to go through these little things so I don't forget them, because I mean to bring them up usually, and then I set them off till the end, and then I never get to them. State leaders, we got to get more state leaders. Do we have anyone in Alaska in this room? Become a state leader. We need a state leader. You know, even if you think you're not qualified to be a state leader, you can learn. You learn. All it is organizing, contacting people in the different counties through different groups, connecting people, you know, pushing people into the system as far as getting the elections going for their juries within their counties, and just organizing, bringing people together and making phone calls and keeping them active and keeping them going and keeping them talking to each other. Eventually, we are going to have, once we get the new site up, we are going to have a, each state will have its own place where they'll have a board. What would they call that? I don't know. I don't think they call it a bulletin board. They call it something else. But anyway, every state will have a board, and people will be able to communicate through those boards. We will have also one large, we'll have a national chat room that'll be active 24/7. And people will be able to come in and out of that room and talk to people. If we may try to see if we can get state chat rooms going, when we get enough people and activity, we will start a state chat room. We'll have to figure out at what point of membership. Like, for instance, if a state has X amount of people registered qualifies for being able to create a chat room, then we'll do it, you know, and then people can be talking just on the state level also. But definitely there'll be an area, a board where people will be able to talk. Let me see, at our home meetup, wrong one, let me go back here. I should have pushed on the top of this page. Okay, on our meetup page right here, we do have a place where people can go to the message board. That's what it's called. I guess it's a message board. And, you know, the state coordinator or organizer, they'll be the administrator on the new website, and they will deal with all of the situations and problems that might come up on the bulletin board area. And they'll maintain order, make sure nothing inappropriate goes up there, and work things out. But people will be able to have a discussion board here and communicate with each other. And again, if you get enough of a population in your state on board, and it would call for qualify for saying, hey, it's worthwhile putting up a special chat room just for that state, we'll do it. And I think eventually we will get chat rooms for every state and a national chat room. And there's a lot of things. We have so many things. It's going to be a very powerful website once we get it built, or we'll get the funding to get it built. And again, that could be happening this week or so.
Williams said, listen, he wants to know about how much we need a goal or a target, set a goal or a target, and people will rise to the need. People should know that this new website, depending on the bandwidth that it's going to be, can be anywhere like from around 250 to 300 a month. So that's ongoing.
That's just to begin with, without going through bandwidth. That's just the initial coming. Once you start to get the bandwidth moving, that's where, because this particular web server that we're going to has security. Our security on our website has been broken. The veil has been broken, and we can't keep them out. So they've been playing around with our website. It hasn't been too bad lately, but things have been going on, and we're presuming someone has broken in. So, and when I say broken, I mean, you know, they're able to do things that causes a little virus problem or a problem trying to downloads and things like that. But on the website that we are putting together, we're doing it on a server that is amongst servers that have the highest security. So they have very good security, we understand. And also we'll have the ability to have as much space as needed as we grow, and also as much broadband as needed as we grow. At some point, you know, it could cost, you know, thousands of dollars a month. You know, right now we owe a bill on a webinar. We owe about $1,000 right now. And so, you know, bills are mounting up and we can only hold so long. And while I'm on that subject, just in case, and I will post a message up on board and I definitely will get an email out. If we don't, I got to pay that bill within the next week. And if we get some money this week, no problem. I pay the bill and we'll continue on webinar because I think webinar is a good program. And we not only for communications, but also the fact that we can share the screen, which is really helpful. But if, for chance, we don't get the money this week and we can't pay that bill yet, we may temporarily go back over to TalkShoe. And that information will be posted immediately if that happens. And also we will send out an email immediately. We'll send it out through Meetup here. And we'll also send it out. I have a list of quite a few people that I would send out, and you know, so we'll try to notify everybody. But hopefully we won't have to do that. But we'll see what happens. We'll see where it goes. But yeah, if people can give money and help move this along, that would be good. But meanwhile, you know, we're on a shoestring and everything's out of pocket. Let's see. Newspapers, blogs, emails, radio. This is the time now. Things are happening and they're going to get bigger. And we definitely need to get the word out to the media as fast as possible. We're talking about this for a while, but we really have to get this out. People, everybody should be sending press releases. To get a press release, just go over to our breaking news. Look at the latest, and here's the press release right here, okay? This is it. You can send this information out just like that in an email. You'll want to put this page, link to this page up here for them to get more information. We have the latest, November 4th, 2013, Common Law Grand Jury files quo warranto with Greene County Supreme Court for hesitating to process true bill of indictment against their colleagues as required by law for arraignment scheduling and for the removal from office. For more details, read the quo warranto. And then people can click on that and the quo warranto will pop up. Now, we're going to talk about that in a short. You can even send this out and put the quo warranto attached, and the quo warranto is a PDF. You could save it to your computer, and then you can email it to the news with the quo warranto attached. But the best news right now, I think, is local news, local newspapers, blogs, even just getting it out by email. We've been sending out some blasting that we've got the news, you know, the breaking news, and just take that and cut and paste that information and put it out to other people, just get it out to a lot of people. Of course, keep getting people to come onto our page, front page, and tell them to watch the video. Let's see. We also at some point, and I believe it may be within the next week or two. We don't know when. As soon as things break, that's when it's going to happen. And so I think in the next week, 10 days or 2 weeks, I think less than 2 weeks, we are going to get to a point where we're going to be going down to a particular courthouse. We will not say which one for a demanding. But we're not going to do that until we get the news media behind us. So we're going to make a circus out there. We're going to get the news media, and we want hundreds and even possibly 1,000 people at this courthouse. This is something worthwhile traveling for. This is something worthwhile taking off from work for. This is so important that we get the showing, because this is what's going to force them. We are going to win in the court of public opinion. That's where we're going to win the case. We're not going to win this in any courtroom. We're going to win it in a court of public opinion. And so when we hit that courthouse and the news is there and the people are there and we bring up the next item that we're going to do, the paper we're going to bring in to them and the demand that we're going to have, then that's when eventually they will break. So we'll be doing that. People need to be paying attention for that and really seriously think about taking off that particular day. And I know it's hard for people to take off, and, you know, they can't afford to lose money. Times are hard and so on and so forth. But look at this. This is to save the Republic. If we lose the Republic, you're not going to have a job. If we lose the Republic, you're not going to have a future for your family, for your children. So this is important. We have to save the Republic. And we have to come to each other's aid, no matter what. Nobody will be left hanging out there. Even state to state will come to their aid and do what has to be done. Now, there are a lot of states that have things in their constitutions, or they have some of them have things in their constitutions. Some of them have a legislature that is anti-grand jury. But that's irrelevant. That's null and void. It's an uphill battle in New York, and I think once we beat this in New York, I think it'll be a lot easier in any state. It'll start to really flow through like water. Okay, the big breaking news, the quo vanto. This was the plan that we had, the next move to make, which was the quo vanto. We thought about this. There's a number of things we can do, and as we said before, we're not going to reveal the other things that we can do because that would be revealing to the enemy. But, of course, as we make the move, we'll talk about what it is we've done. So it was decided that the next move, which made all the sense in the world, was quo vanto. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through this quo vanto that we filed in Greene County. And we filed it in Greene County because that's where we filed the bill of the true bill of indictment, which is a presentment, but the true bill of indictment. And we did it in Greene County for strategic reasons. And now, when we decided to go for a quo vanto, some people were thinking we might want to go for that quo vanto onto the judges that we indicted. But as we really thought that out, it made more sense to take the quo vanto after the judges of Greene County. There are two elected judges there, and also the court clerk. Now, although the clerks don't really know what they're doing to some degree, they don't understand some of this stuff, so on, but the chief court clerk does understand. They are able to read these things. They are able to understand what's going on. And that's why most of the chief court clerks disappeared when we made our rounds. We met only one or two of them through our rounds, and it was the first two, and then they realized we were traveling the state, and they disappeared when we came. But anyway, that's another story which we reported on an earlier date, and you can listen to our older programs if you're not familiar with that. We do have all our own programs, our Monday night programs, on our Monday night call right here, right below instructions on how to get onto this call. We have our talk show programs, which we're doing before we started the webinar. But we do have, again, all the listings of all the Monday night calls we've had since we started. So, anyway, that's there. Let's see where we're at here. Okay, so let's go look at this quo vanto. And what exactly is a quo vanto? A quo vanto is like a notice and demand. But it's a demand or notice and demand from the king himself. Now, usually a quo vanto, like a writ, might go out through a judge, because normally the king doesn't speak directly. He speaks through his judges who reflect his will. But since we don't have a common law court out there, we have no judges that reflect the will of the people. Once we get the common law courts in place and back in process again, then we'll have just justices that will reflect the will of the people, because that's what they're supposed to do. But meanwhile, a quo vanto is directly from the king itself. There was another possibility we had thought about a while ago, it disappeared very quickly because we had experience in it, and that was the writ of mandamus. A writ of mandamus is not coming from the king. It's a request to the, well, it's sort of a, well, it is pretty much a request to the court to tell the other court to obey the law. But they've turned that around, and that has bitten us, and we've ran into problems with that because they use that opportunity to pull us into their court and take control over us and throw us out of their court. And so, and we appealed that last case that they threw out, and they didn't have the authority to do that with a writ of mandamus. But a writ of mandamus is where the judge is supposed to be telling the lower court, or it could be a sheriff or somebody holding an office, whatever, to obey the law, obey the rules, or whatever the case may be, or they would be held in contempt of court. So we went with the quo warranto because this keeps us out of their court. It keeps it right in the king's court, which is the court of public opinion. It keeps it, the people are above it. You know, we are not going to save this country any other way but the people. Only the people can save America. Back about 300-400 AD, when the Anglo-Saxons came to England and set up this system, eventually a king was put in place to protect their sovereignty, and that's why the king was always there to reflect the sovereign. And when that king ran astray in 1215, 25 barons, which is 25 freemen, which is 25 people, we are the barons, we are the freemen. Okay, so 25 barons got together, and they pulled the king off onto the side of the road. They pulled out an axe. They set a paper before him, and he had the choice, either sign the paper or they were going to take off his head. And he did sign the paper, and that paper was the Magna Carta. Now, later it was negotiated. We're not going to get into the history of that, but the bottom line is that was the beginning. The people stood up and took their freedom. That was the only way it could have happened. Some years later, in 1776, I think it was 56 men came together and signed the Declaration of Independence. It was the people who took back control. It was the people who stood up and saved the and created the republic. They saved the justice system, because ultimately that's what it's all about, the justice system. Today, if we think that we're going to get the judges to do it for us, or some court to do it for us, or anything else, then we're only fooling ourselves. If we think we're going to find people to elect them and they're going to go do it, they are the problem. They're not going to do it. They can't do it. They don't know how to do it. Only the people can do it. We know how to do it. We are learning how to do it. We, the people, will stand up and save this nation. And if we don't, then it's because the people decided not to stand up. But right now, I think we are on a movement across this nation that the people are standing up. So this is our next step. We filed a paper on October 22nd at 11:25 a.m., which was a presentment of a true bill by 18 constituted common law grand juries. It was filed against Aide Gale Prudente, Michael V. Kokoma, C. Randall Hendricks, and Alan D. Schenkelman, here and after the conspirators. Those are the four top judges. Two of these judges are very high-ranking judges, and the other two are also pretty much up there, but a little lower down on the totem pole, so to speak. But the Chief Justice of New York State, the Administrative Court, Unified Court, Supreme Court, which is an oxymoron, you know, when they say administrative, they're not talking, they are talking about the administration of the court, but I also think they're talking that it's an administrative court, even though it holds the name of Supreme Court, because obviously they deal in the court of equity alone and they do not deal in the common court. And so, of course, that's what our battle is all about. So this was the Chief Justice and their underling, particularly Gale Prudente, that sent out the letter throughout all of New York State to all clerks to tell them not to accept or respond in any way to our papers. Interesting thing is that only one county thus far has sent it back, and they probably, after they sent it back, maybe they said, oops, They were very early on. They did it very quickly, and I think they did it before they really got our paperwork. The fact that they haven't really sent it back tells us that the clerks are frightened. They know something. They understand something, and they are frightened. We know they're frightened because we spoke to them in person, and we can see they were frightened. We were intimidating them. We saw that the way we came upon them, they responded very quickly, and they were intimidated, and they answered every single question. That is odd to get a bureaucrat to answer every single question. And they did. They even came out to meet us. They brought other authorities out to meet us. They were very polite with us when we did this, so we know they were frightened. Now, we have been threatened thoroughly by these high judges of the New York State with serious legal, how did they put that, Gerard? Consequences or something?
Something like unfortunate legal consequences or regrettable legal consequences. Whatever.
So they wanted to enforce that. They faxed us that to numerous times. The day before we filed, they faxed it to us again. And so they were trying to, you know, intimidate us not to file. We filed, and we filed it 12 days ago, and they have done nothing. We have been met with silence. And when they're frightened, that's what they do. They just remain silent. They step back, and they're looking to see if we know what to do next. So we made the next move. I think they're going to get it soon. And this is the most powerful move, is this quo vanto, by the way, especially what it reveals. But let's go forward. Let me read this. So we named all those individuals here and after conspirators with the New York Supreme Court, Greene County Chief Clerk Michelle Carroll, who under U.S. Code 18, subsection 2076, U.S. Code 18, subsection 2071, and also subsection 1512B, was to process said bill as required by law for justice assignment, arraignment, scheduling, and the removal of said defendants from office, whereas the grand jury was to be contacted for the presenting of witnesses and affidavits to the prosecutor for the same. Now, we have a lot of footnotes on these things. When you go back and read it yourself, you can read the footnotes. Get used to reading footnotes. Do not read papers or information with footnotes on it. Do not skip the footnotes. They're extremely important. They really define the paper. Anyway, 12 days have expired since the handing down of said true bill for indictment. No action has been taken. No press releases has been noticed. Therefore, in the interest of justice, the grand jury is now formally inquiring as to the reason for delay and or if said bill has been concealed, removed, mutilated, or destroyed, and if so, by whom? Supreme Court Judge Clerk Michelle Carroll, Supreme Court Judge Charles M. Taylor, and Supreme Court Judge George J. Pulver, Jr., is to answer the following questions to this demand and give account of their stewardship concerning this matter under penalty of law within 10 calendar days from the date of this demand, plus one-day mailing. The Supreme Court Chief Clerk and the Supreme Court Justices are servants of the people. Servants have a duty to answer the people without delay and are not to answer through attorneys. Furthermore, the Sixth Amendment's right to counsel does not attach when an individual is summoned to answer before a grand jury. Therefore, an answer through an attorney will be construed as silence, which can only be equated with fraud when there is a legal or moral duty to speak, or where an inquiry left unanswered would be intentionally misleading and thereby may subject you to indictment as co-conspirator. As agents of trusts, you have a duty to be careful not to exceed your entrusted jurisdictions. Your corporation and all persons named above and others yet to be unmasked have a moral and lawful duty to obey the law, to operate with clean hands, and provide honest service to we the people. Now, I just want to stop here for a second to make a note. If you notice, We said your corporation. They're acting under a corporate charter. They are acting in courts of iniquity, which I'm, well, they are courts of iniquity, but in courts of equity, and ultimately under, what do they call that, that law, Gerard? I'm missing this word.
I'm sorry, I was typing, I wasn't listening.
Well, anyway, they're equity courts, okay? You're out at sea, and, what are those courts out at sea?
Admiralty.
That's the word I'm looking for. Thank you. Admiralty courts, okay? And that's what they're under. So they're under corporate charter. And when you get someone acting under corporate charter, and it's a corporation, like the state is a corporation, and you pull a quo wando, now that whole thing can come down. This is huge to them, and we'll talk about that maybe in the future, about the relationship between the seriousness by this quo wando and the fact that they are a corporation and they had taken an oath to hold up the Constitution, and instead they hold up their corporate charter. And so, but anyway, therefore, the grand jury requires that you, in good faith, perform your judicial process duties and answer the following questions immediately by faxing your answers to that number. Number one, are you being intimidated or threatened? Yes or no? If so, by who? Now, this is most important to the clerk, okay? And remember, we told them, don't get a lawyer, because you get yourself an attorney, they can't answer for you. We'll assume that's a non-answer, and you're going to be held liable. This is one case. I can't do this on my own, of course. I'm going to have to pull in a meeting in the next week with the people of New York State here to decide whether we are going to truly indict this clerk and these two judges, should they not respond. Of course, I'm going to make the case that we need to do that, and then we the people here in New York, will take a vote and we'll act accordingly. But questions, are you being intimidated or threatened? Yes or no? If so, by whom? Have the conspirators been instructing you? Yes or no? Have there been cooperation with the conspirators? The conspirators, remember, we defined them, are the judges that are under indictment. So have they been cooperating, have there been cooperation with the conspirators? Yes or no? Are you being intimidated into making a false report, especially calling the FBI? Yes or no? Why has the grand jury not been notified in order to pass on further information necessary for prosecution? Why has there been no arraignment? Why has there been no press release? Is the true bill being concealed by someone? Yes or no? If so, by who? Has the true bill been removed from the file? Yes or no? If so, by who? Has the true bill been mutilated or destroyed? Yes or no? If so, by who? Supreme Court Judge Charles M. Taylor and Supreme Court Judge George J. Pulver, Jr. is to provide copies of the below listed documents, said copies to be certified under penalty of perjury and exemplified in accordance with 1 Stat 122, I'm not going to read all those numbers, under Article 4 of the Constitution of the United States, for the United States of America, Anno Domini 1789, with Articles of Amendment, Anno Domini 1791. Number one, oath of office. And then there was a New York Constitution, Article 3, and so on. Number two, letter of appointment from, if applicable. Number three, delegation of authority affidavit. Number four, employee affidavit, if applicable. Number five, official surety bond required for lawfully holding office. Number six, registration statement, Title 22 U.S. Code, subsection 611 and 612. Number seven, loyalty and security clearance, Title 22 U.S. Code 272B. Number eight, state economic statement of interest, make full disclosure of any and all economic conflicts of interest regarding holding a public office or duality of allegiance. It is presumed and or assumed that it is your sworn or affirmed duty and fiduciary obligation to provide the above information in a timely and truthful manner. Since recipient not timely and fully comply in 10 days, it will be deemed by tactic procuration your implied admission that you have failed to qualify for your office or employment pursuant to the principle of law embodied in the decision of Norton versus Lewis, 34, Cal, and so on. I'm not going to read all that. Signed by order and on behalf of the Unified Common Law Jury of New York, the administrator, and a signature and a seal. Okay, one other thing. This unified seal that we put together, we're going to be talking about that here in New York with other New York members to discover whether we should get a unified seal made up that could imprint the paper. Of course, its purpose would only be for letter writing in serious situations like this. Right now, what we did is when we created, those who have created the seal by following our instructions online here, and they went through Staples, you can go to create a seal, a unified court seal for your state. And when you get to the point where you're just about to order, you get to see that seal. And if you right-click it and copy image, you can save it in your computer. And that's what we did here. So we just saved the image, and we've been using that. And that may be sufficient. I don't know that we're going to really use the unified court seal all that much. We might use it a little bit in the beginning, because especially when we deal with the bigger problems up in our capital in Albany, we're going to want to deal with that under a unified seal and as all of us together. And, of course, those paperwork will have all of our imprinted seal from every single county that is on board at the time. And but letter writing and communications for whatever purposes we're doing will be wise to have just one seal, and we'll just call that the Unified New York Seal, which looks identical to the county seal. It just says Unified New York instead of, Dutchess County, New York, or Greene County, New York, or whatever it is. But everything else is the same. All right, so that's pretty much it with the paper, and I think that's pretty much it for what we have to update people on. Let me just recap everything real quick. We filed this paper, and we do have a news release on it, people should get out there and send this out. But we did file this paper today, November 4th, 2013, common law grand jury files quo ante with Greene County Supreme Court for hesitating to process true bill of indictment against their colleagues as required by law for arraignment, scheduling, and removal from office. For more details, read the quo ante. Again, everybody, if you haven't joined our meetup, get up and join that meetup, and we're using that until we get the new site up. And it's a good place for communications and looking into the calendar of events coming up and so on. Also, there is a place where you can talk. What was that called again? Let me see.
Like a message room.
Message boards, right here.
A message board, yeah.
Yeah, so they have a message board. State leaders, we need state leaders. I just want to go back to that real quickly because I don't know that we went through that sufficiently enough, and we're going to open up for questions and answers or comments and so on. But here on the state leaders page. Okay, listen, we need state leaders. Alaska, Arkansas, Delaware, Georgia, Hawaii, Idaho, Iowa, Louisiana, Maine, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Mississippi, Montana, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Oregon, Rhode Island, Texas, Vermont, West Virginia, Wisconsin, Wyoming. If you live in any of those states, and you can volunteer to take control as a state organizer to help organize your state, even if it's temporary. And you're holding the place and working and doing what you can until someone else that might want to take that position. But let's get people up there. then we need reports from those state organizers on what counties, you know, how many counties have been elected. I know we have more counties elected than what we have up on the board right now. So even those existing coordinators, please take a look. And if we don't have a count of the elected counties in your state, give me a call. You can send it by email. And if you don't see it get updated within 24 hours, just call me. Everybody has my phone number. Just call me. Don't call me unless you have to or it's important or whatever. But, you know, if you have to call me, call me. But let's get these updates here, and let's get these numbers up. So let's get the state leaders. Let's call Vermont and North Dakota. Let's get them on board. Get this information, all this stuff out to newspapers, blogs, emails, and radio. And be ready for the call when we need hundreds and perhaps 1,000 people to show up at a courthouse to let them know we the people mean business and we're here. This is the revolution.
And those states that have coordinator, that have leaders, they need to be calling the other leaders and people. Ellie's in here saying she sees two of the five leaders in Montana, but there's been no movement. You guys have got to call each other and help each other go to meetups and make phone calls and get those counties organized.
Talk, you know, on Skype. That's what we do, right?
Yeah, and I mean, listen, if you get... You know, you just put the announce the meeting and make phone calls, and it doesn't matter as long as you have more than three people there to witness it, and they vote on it. That's it. You know, we have government by the majority that participate. You see, the thing is it's not so important how many people you have when you start the grand jury, because it's a unified grand jury. So technically, you can have 25 people in the state is a grand jury. You know, I mean. Obviously, we're going to want more than that, and obviously we'll need more than that. And when we get into the courts, we'll use the same methods that they do. We'll call jurors up, you know what I mean, and bring them in. But when this thing gets viral, they're going to come in anyway. But they won't come in if you don't have it established. So the main thing is to get the thing in place so that when they want to come in, at least you have your counties established and you have your paperwork and everything's ready to go. It doesn't really matter how many people show up to that meeting. Because all the work is done, you know, after that. So don't be afraid, you know, to have a meeting and only have a half a dozen people or less show up. You do the election and you file the paperwork. And right now, that filing of that paperwork is also a movement. You don't understand that the more grand juries that get established, especially in New York State, but all over the United States, as you guys put the stamps on the papers and stuff, at some point, you're going to send them into your counties, and they're going to know you're coming. And they're all going to watch New York State. You see, because once we win the battle, we win the war, because the other states won't go up against it. This is really a national battle, no doubt about it, because it's basically constitutional issues. And the Constitution applies to every state in the United States. You know, these are basic issues. You know, this baloney that they don't have to follow the Constitution in this state or that state or the Bill of Rights, that's not true. They can't take our rights away from state to state. Yes, the states are sovereign and they can do things the way they want, but they cannot take your right away. If they could do that, there could be no Constitution in theoretically in existing in a state because they decided that it didn't apply in their state. So let's get over that and let's get it going, because basically the battle is here, and the battle is the war, and get those things established so that you can all go to your court systems in mass, because that's what this movement, it needs to be in mass, you know? I mean, that's what was the success of Martin Luther King and Gandhi and all these other people. They had the mass of the people, and if we can't get a mass of the people up now, we'll never get it. Everybody's ticked off, and now's the time. All right, I'm sorry, John. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. All right, so we're going to take questions here. There was one thing I wanted to bring up before we started questions and slipped my mind. So
I want to bring something up real. I'm sorry, I'm not done. Listen, somebody said to me today that they wanted to donate, but they can't use PayPal. They don't want to use PayPal.
Do they have tinfoil in their kitchen?
No. Well, listen, not everybody, you know, they ask so many questions, PayPal. And PayPal, you know what PayPal's connected with. Right. They're part of that New World Order crap. So I told them, don't you have information on the site?
Yeah, right here. All they have to do is go here, click on donate, okay? And if you want to do a donation without going through PayPal, you can send a check or money order, And you can make the check out to Tradewinds and send it to my business address here. And that's one way to do it. Other than that, of course, there's PayPal, and you could do credit card through PayPal. So those are the options and the ways that we have it set up.
Right, so. And so you send a check, you can send any amount. They were wondering, we got 10, suppose they want to give 5, and PayPal won't let them give 5. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I think the easiest way is to send a check or money order if you don't want to use PayPal. I just wanted to mention that. Okay.
Okay, well, who's the first person? We've got quite a few hands up. So
you got all kinds of hands and all kinds of questions, and I'll tell you who the first
person is. Well, give me a person first, and then you can look at questions.
Arnie's hand's been up for 50 minutes. Arnie Conkle. I'll unmute him. Ready?
Okay, he's unmuted. Now he's unmuted. Go ahead, Arnie. Was that Annie? That's not Arnie. It's A-N-N.
Oh.
Annie.
I guess I better put my glasses on.
Put your glasses on, Gerard. Come on.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Annie. You got the mic. You've been unmuted. Hello, Annie.
Hello.
How you
there
doing?
You
hello.
I'm okay. I kind of got lost there in a trance.
Oh, okay. Well, we woke you up.
I was paying attention.
Okay.
I'm not new to this per se, but I'm really getting into it. I mean, I've just had so many things happen, and I'm a law-abiding citizen, and my mother was killed in a nursing home. The government sanctioned it. Like I mentioned in an email, I have an illness that the government doesn't recognize. It's called Lyme disease. You know, I mean, it's just all this insane stuff is going on, and it's just not right.
And it's only going to get worse.
Yeah, this is not by just the fact that they're incompetent, which they are anyway, but this is by design. They want to create havoc. If you ever watched Get Smart, they were up against chaos. Well, this is chaos. That might have been a little bit of an insight on what was going on.
But see, here's the thing, though. They're intruding upon people in the sense of my elderly mother, who is a brain-injured, disabled person, was murdered by drug.
They do it every day. They did it to my mother. They did it to my father. They get to a point and they kick them off.
Then they take the estate away.
Is that kind of what got you into this?
Well, some of the people involved with us have some similar things to you. They've gotten in for that. Look at anybody who's in, especially in the Tea Parties and the different liberty groups that have arisen over the past 4, 5, or 6 years, Ron Paul groups, all those different people, they're here because they saw something, they see something. A lot of us, and most of us, is we've got stuck in a court situation someplace, and then we went to exercise our unalienable rights and tried to reason with the courts, and we were sandbagged and steamrolled over, and we realized, wait a second, what happened to the Constitution? And we woke up, we saw the bars in the jail. We are in statutory prison right now. People need to realize that.
I am a law-abiding person. At this point, I hate the police. You know, you hear on the news once in a while a judge gets shot or something like that. I mean, I don't cry over any of this. I mean, it's like enough already.
Well, this is what we're going to fix. This is what we're here to fix. Only we the people can fix this. Only we the people can save America.
And
only
you
us.
See, They want bloodshed because that if the bottom comes up, they can bring the top down, and they have the technology to bring the top down. Although they won't do good because there's so many guns, and it's a horrible even thought to think about where we would go, because there would be so much bloodshed, and it wouldn't stop for years. It would be guerrilla warfare. It would be terrible. They want for the people to say, please stop the shooting, and then if Chinese troops come in, they go, oh, thank God somebody's here to stop the war. That's what they're hoping, or people say, oh, the hell with the Constitution, just make law and order, and that's what they want. But you see, that's why we have to do what we're doing.
I've always thought about the Chinese because my mother was a World War II vet, and she was, even though she wasn't Jewish, she was in a concentration camp, POW camp, and a labor camp over a span of 22 months, starting at age 17.
Yeah.
And she used to tell me that the whole thing about war is, doesn't matter what technology you have to have the manpower to occupy.
Right.
So, really, the only country that could occupy, based on population and people, would be China.
Yeah, well, China, Russia combined with the UN.
Right, but let me tell you something. We went on that call. John went on that call, and that was an international call. And we got emails back from China. They're interested. See, so the Chinese people, they're sick of it too. You know what I mean? They're sick of it. And I mean, the most egregious
New Zealand, Germany.
Are probably the Chinese, because they've been under. Listen, they killed more Chinese people. So this is also becoming a worldwide movement, because the people are tired of the tyranny. They're tired of the iron fist coming
down. Well, the serfdom is going to rise. I mean, it's like, and many of, you know, it's
yeah, but
saying,
remember, we're not
really. You don't
really
know your rights, you don't have any.
Serfdoms are waking up to discover they're kings, and the kings are going to rise. And when you discover
right.
that you're the king, and we are the people, we are the consentors to these people, and we start to apply that and give people nullification to their statutes when they try to control our free will. You know, what they're doing is they're creating statutes to control our behavior. Once we realize that we can just say no, and if enough people get up and say no, the whole court system and everything, on that in itself will collapse their system. Just
you
everybody
see, and,
saying
and by,
no.
And by doing that, you're not creating a vacuum. You know, if there's guns and shooting, you create a vacuum. And when you have a vacuum, anybody can move in.
That's where they're trying to take it anyway.
Right. But doing what we're doing doesn't really create that vacuum. What we're doing is we're working in the system that we have, and we're restoring it. You know, we're not tearing it down. We're reforming it, and we're bringing it back to where it was. That's different.
When did this turn start? When did all this start? Like, when was the date that this started?
1789.
No. I mean the
I'm dead serious.
Time.
Oh, no. This has been going on since the very beginning. We had enemies within our government. Listen,
oh, yeah.
You got to understand, the enemy we are fighting is the same enemy our founding fathers fought.
That's
the
right.
foreign
that's
bankers.
Right.
You have that's yeah. the game. It's the same families. It's the same bloodline. It's the same people.
When they gave us that Federal Reserve System and they promised the future income of every man, woman, and child against the war debt, that was them sticking their claws in. And it has been here. The 14th Amendment took away rights and gave privileges. They used it as an excuse for the blacks, but what they did is they put us all under that corporate system. So this has been going on since 18. What was the 14th Amendment? What was it?
1887. Yeah, somewhere.
1887. So this is. They've been very patient. They've been moving along, you know, incrementally ever since then. And you know, there was a lot of fighting going on with our forefathers about a central bank. And the central bank is what the problem is. If you listen to Ron Paul and all that. That was the thing. When they got their fingers in here with that central bank, then everything kind of rolled along. And now we have, you know, these corporations in with the government. So now you have this kind of corporate Nazism going on, this, you know, fascism, I should say. And it's been going on ever since then. But, you know, it's amazing we've gotten this far, really.
I took a course in graduate school. It was called Ethics. Mm-hmm. It was the hardest course I ever took. And it was just really, really hard. But the bottom line to the whole semester was that corporations have no conscience. They have no ethics. They have because they don't have feelings. You know,
right.
They have
well,
no
we, that's what we moved into. We moved into corporatism. And these people, these legislators, work for corporations. It's corporatism. Everything is under corporate charter. It's no longer under the Constitution. They rule under the corporate charter. Once you understand that, you have a chance of winning in their courts, but it's still an uphill battle. But you get their flesh on the line when you reveal that, and the judge starts to get nervous when he understands that you understand, and he doesn't know what might happen a little bit upline if you keep moving this upline. So they like to get you out of the court quickly then. And so that's the key to fighting a court case. And maybe, well, we're not going to have to really teach too much of that once we get the common law court back, because it's not going to be a problem no more then. Well,
so
that's going to disappear.
What exactly is a common court?
Well, a common law court is a court that runs under natural law. It runs under the principles of natural law. which we've identified as three rules that we operate under: a sense of justice, a sense of honor, and a sense of mercy, and two maxims that we're guided by. And those two maxims are, first of all, in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party, and the state cannot be the injured party. A second maxim is, for every injury, there must be a remedy. So the common law court is not interested in putting people in jail or punishing people. A common law court is interested in justice and finding a way to restore the injured party. And the penalty or the payment or punishment for the individual is to spend their time and a part of their life now restoring the individual that they injured. Now, in our court system, it's all about money. The state makes money. If they find the person, the state gets the money. If they put the person in jail, the state gets money for putting people in jail. They use the injured party to come in for the case that the state is under control, and they benefit from, and then they throw the injured party back out in the streets. And if you want to get any kind of anything out of this, first of all, everything's gone. Who are you going to go after? What are you going to go after? But if there is something to go after, you've got to go into the civil courts, and then they make more money because the judges in those courts make money, and all of the lawyers make money. So it's just nothing but a big cash cow. Our entire government, from the state to the county to the town, the cities, they're all these municipalities, it's all a cash cow, and they're just making money hand over fist in their whole system. And that's the problem. We have to stop that. That's a wrongdoing. It's evil, and we have to stop it. So, any other questions or comments?
Not at this point.
Okay, right. Let's move along. Because
yeah, before you go to the next person, I just want to make a statement here. Whenever anybody calls me on my phone, which I use Skype, I have it set. I have a program called Pamela, and it records the conversation. And the reason why I started recording my conversations is because sometimes I get some really great conversations, especially when it's someone that's calling me that has certain knowledge in areas that we need to gleam off of. And so, you know, I always delete everything. But, you know, when a good conversation comes in, you know, I mark it, put it aside, and then I'll cut it up and put it in and then study it by being able to go to that recording. And I got a good phone call today from someone, I forget her name, it was a recorded program. And she gave her name in the beginning of it, and a recorded conversation. So she gave her name in the beginning, so I removed the name. But now we have the recording, which was a lot of questions, and I gave a lot of answers. And I have a lot of others that I have to go through my recordings and delete a lot. But I've got in there some other good recordings from people who've called with good questions. And they should have been on an open forum because they're really good questions that people ask me all the time, questions were asked in this room, and so on. And so what I'm going to start doing is I'm going to take this collection of calls and turn them into open forums and post them. But bear in mind, if someone gives me their name on that, I do remove their name, so they're anonymous. But the questions and the answers are good for everyone. So I'll find a place, and hopefully by next week I'll start posting some of these things. And again, it's a good place for people to go to listen to like an open forum. Just very simple questions and answers to the process, the procedures, how to, what do we do here and what happens there, and things that people really need to know. So anyway, I just wanted to state that, and we'll get a page up on that shortly. Who's next, Jaron?
Donald Meir. Here, I'll unmute him.
Okay.
Go ahead, Donald.
How you doing, Donald?
That would be, I'm doing fine. How are you, John and Jaron?
Good, thank you.
Excellent. I'd like to announce that the first election of the common law jury will be held at the Fishers Library in the city of Fishers in Hamilton County, Indiana. After this election is complete, I will advance the grand jury throughout the rest of the 91 counties. When we attain 6 completed elections, I will move forward with the filing of all of them at the local county court.
Great. All right, now, did you say you wanted to be the state coordinator?
I am the state coordinator.
Oh, you are the state coordinator. Okay. All right, Don. Great. All right, so I'll put you up. I may have put you up. Didn't we talk earlier? Let me see. I think I put up that Indiana had an election.
Yeah, you put me up on there.
Yeah. Let me double check the but anyway, and what are the questions while I'm looking this up or comments?
I have no more questions or comments. Oh, there is something I would like to say. I would like to welcome a new county coordinator. His name is David Blodgett. I don't know if he's on tonight. He's from Vandenberg County.
Very good.
Okay, right here. Yeah, okay, so you have one elected grand jury in Indiana, so I'll have to get that done. I'll get that up tonight or tomorrow, okay?
Well, the actual election won't occur until tomorrow night.
That's okay. It won't be till tomorrow I get it up, and it'll be fine. You have one tomorrow being elected. That'll work fine.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. Anything else? Anything else, Don?
That's all I got.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm good.
All right. Who's next?
Okay. Next is Jesse Baker.
Hey, Jesse. How you doing?
Go ahead.
Hello, John Gerard. How are you doing?
How are you doing? Good to talk
good.
To you.
Good. I did send a an update some time ago to support, and just thought, well, I have you on the phone, and you said about it. We do have 10 counties now here in Pennsylvania that had their reinstatement election.
Okay, so PA has 10. I will update.
Yeah, it has 8 on that county.
Okay.
State coordinator site.
I'm making a note here. Carl might have sent it over to me because I'm the only one that could fix this part of it. And so he might have sent it over to me and I might have missed it or something. But here it is. I got it now. It's on my notebook. And
okay.
It's a thing
we have
to 10. Do for tomorrow. So we'll change it to 10.
All right. And more to come here shortly. And I'll let you know when I know that their elections are scheduled.
Okay, great.
And just to let you know, I've been talking with the sheriff of Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, just, you know, having a little bit of a conversation dealing with a personal situation with a court case that I have been dealing with for the last 10 years. And something that the judge did that was so outrageous that, you know, anybody that is breathing would see that it was wrong. And left the sheriff know about this, and he first tried to, like, you know, throw me a curveball that, you know, that they are able to just issue orders without having hearings. And I said, wait a minute, there's just no way that can possibly be true. I mean, he signed an oath of office that he's going to uphold the Constitution of the United States and uphold the Pennsylvania Constitution. And he's affecting my due process. And what I want to do is I want to file a personal criminal complaint. And I want you, I gave him the information, and I wanted him to look over it as a law official, the highest law official in the county, to be able to sign an affidavit of probable cause. And then forward that and take it to the prosecutor, because you know, basically he tried to have a hearing after it was canceled. I had a cancellation notice. So anyhow, I'm striking up a conversation with the sheriff, and you know, hopefully he is a constitutional sheriff. And I was just wanting to ask, would it be okay to share with him the booklet prior to getting into the courthouse?
Well, you could, but I'll tell you what, with the experience we're having, you got to remember, sheriffs are as dumbed down as we are. So we're relearning everything. We're coming back and relearning what is real now. And they're as dumb as we are. And all of the conversations we've had with sheriffs or the meetings and stuff, we see that they rely heavily on lawyers, which are the minions of the New World Order. We had one Tea Party individual who came out to look at our site, and they brought a sheriff out with them who was, you know, she's working with the sheriff and stuff. And also there was a lawyer involved with another Tea Party, And, you know, what a mix. I mean, you have a politician, you have a lawyer, and of course, this one individual didn't understand anything about law, so she was relying on these two people. And they did nothing but totally dog us. And anything that was positive, they ignored, and they focused in on what they thought was negative, and they stretched things to the limit, and they said things that wasn't true. They made accusations and so on and so forth. By going to them beforehand, I don't think is going to be helpful, because the first thing they're going to do, anything you tell them, is they're going to go and talk to the county attorney, because they have access to the county attorney, the sheriff does. And they're going to go talk to them first. We've had meetings with the sheriff, and he sounded real good. He looked real good, but, you know, he was talking around the problem. When he was asked the hard questions, he deferred over to the county attorney, who then came over to the mic and talked and then went back. So, look, they don't know. I would say don't communicate with them now, because you may be opening a can of worms, and you may be getting them to get ready to assault you before you even come in and try to stop you before you even come in, because they'll see you as a threat, because you're against the status quo, and they're too frightened to be free. They don't understand what liberty is. Liberty is taking responsibility onto your own. Liberty is maturity. You deciding how your behavior should be. And as long as your kingdom stops at the next person's kingdom, you're fine. But, you know, we have to be kind, and we have to be considerate to our next door neighbor and so on and so forth. And that's what is required in liberty. They don't think it could happen. What the sheriff said and he was the undersheriff. He wasn't the sheriff, but he was the undersheriff. And one of the things he said is that it was a Freudian slip on his hand. He said he came out, he was a little angry and so on and so forth, because we were saying things that were against what he was saying. He was attacking us. But he came out and said, the common people just can't do this. Well, wait a second. I'm the common people. What is he talking about? I'm not intelligent enough to do this, that we need lawyers to do this? You see, therefore I think our time is best spent constituting our common law grand juries within our counties, organizing, preparing, and when the time comes, take power. When you get that seat in the building, now's the time to talk to the sheriff, because now you're talking with authority, and he is going to listen. And he's going to obey, because he understands what you're going to tell him. You arrest somebody for carrying a weapon without a permit, and you arrest them. That's kidnapping. We're not going after him. We're going after you. Now, that's going to be really hard for these law enforcement agents to digest. I've had conversations with these people, even people who claim to be oath keepers and come to the meetings. And they do get stuck when they talk about this, the oath keepers usually, because they realize I'm right, but then all their life they've been arresting people for having a weapon without permission from mommy and daddy. So, but they will listen then. Right now, you're too crazy. This is outside of their normal reality. They're living in the fiction world. You're awakening to the reality world, and the two doesn't mix. So it's going to be a time of re-education. We have to re-educate our children. We have to get these things into schools. We have to get our control of our schools back to the local, to the people, to the families that have their children in the school, and so on. So it's going to take a little time, but not that much. Once we get in power, it'll happen very quickly. But that's my suggestion. I know people want to talk to sheriffs. I say leave it alone. I strongly suggest that, but of course, people might have other ideas, but I don't think you should do it.
Okay, well, you know, I have, like I said, have had a conversation with him a couple times, not necessarily about the common law grand jury concept, but it has been about abuse of power by a judge within the county. But I thought I would ask you to see if it would be a good idea to, you know,
Let me give you another example, and this might really hit home for you, because here in Pennsylvania, and I think you guys had the same problem. We were teaching in the beginning, and I know you remember this. We were posting in the in the courthouses on the bulletin boards, and in the beginning, we didn't have too much of a problem because it was the right thing to do. It was the honorable thing to do, to go to the town halls and the city halls and post it on the bulletin board. After all, it's the people's bulletin board. There's an election for the reconstituting of a common law grand jury here in the county. It's going to be at such a place, come one, come all. And we put it in a newspaper. And some of these people in there, you know, these people with their stuck-up nose, who are you? What are you doing? What do you do? That's not for that. You can't do that, you know. And they'd give us a hard time. They'd take it down. But some of the people would go up and see this on the board. They'd take it down. They'd call the county attorney. Next thing you know, we're getting calls from the county attorney. We get a room going in the town hall, and then it's canceled. We actually had a raid. I was in the middle of giving a presentation down in Rockland County, and someone discovered this on the bulletin board, so they called the county attorney up. The county attorney got all irate and upset, and the news people were out there. And by the way, the news people reported the county attorney as the factual process and us as crazies. But in any event, we were in there. We were halfway through the process, and all of a sudden, the doors in the back of the room just sprung open, and all these cops are coming in down the lines. Who's in charge here? Who's running this thing? And I said, well, I guess I am, you know. I was polite to them. I didn't give them a hard time. They were obnoxious at first and forceful, but I was humble and responsive, and then they kind of backed off of that. But they closed us down. We had to shut everything on and leave. It was a raid. You can't go in here. The attorney pulled your permit. Well, what for? For teaching freedom? For talking about the power of the people? I mean, they can't understand any of that. So we didn't give them a hard time. We left.
Not only that, the county attorney has no authority to do something like that. They don't have that kind of authority. You need a town supervisor or a town board member or some elected official like that. The town attorney doesn't run the town. See, that's the problem. They hire these attorneys, and then they let the attorney run the town, and this is what you get.
So we had that problem. We had other people shut down in towns. We had people shut out of libraries. So we just stopped that. You know, we just stopped it. And we started telling people, don't do that. No, just, it's nothing but a problem. I know PA had a problem, too. And I think there were some other places. So just don't do it.
Every one of those is a crime. And listen, you could go after that, but
we don't have time.
To get distracted with that. We'll spend our time chasing these buffoons around, that's where you'll win the battle and lose the war. You see, we got to win the battle getting in the courtroom, because then when we win that battle, we win the war.
Right, and I think if you go to the sheriff, this is the same kind of thing's going to happen. He's going to go to the county attorney and say, hey, look, I was talking to these people, and this is what they're telling me. Oh, no, they're crazy. No, we got to shut them down. You're going to get assaulted. You're going to have problems. So I say, just forget about that. Focus in on put your energy into what we're doing. Get the numbers going. Get the organization going. And get to the point where you come in head-to-head with the state. And to get your first seat. Once you get your first seat, you're done. That's it. You won the war in the state. It's over because everyone else is coming behind you. One county lets you in. You can operate out of that county, and you can indict every judge that gets in the way of any common law grand jury. Once they know you're not going to be afraid to indict, you may have to do one. But once they know you're not afraid, believe me, all the rest of them are going to stop, and they're all going to come in. That's what's going to happen here in New York. We did the indictment of the four big cheeses here in New York, the chief administrative justices of the Supreme Court, the Unified Supreme Court, and now we're putting the pressure on another judge and two judges and a clerk with this Coahuanto, and our next move, we got a couple of things up our sleeve, so to speak, but we're putting the pressure on them. Believe me, they are frightened to death. The reason why is because they have skeletons in their closets, and they know once the people get in, they are done.
Yep.
So they're going to be leaving town. I'll tell you right now, they're going to be skipping. The judges are going to be leaving in the swarms. I believe that. But we'll see.
Well, one other thing, too, Hagen has written a letter to Pines. I can't think of Siegfried Pines from the AOPC, which is the administrative court for all the other.
Right, I'm aware of that. I understand you guys have a potential in through this letter, and because of some clerk and some things that are going on, so he's trying to work through that doorway. And if he's successful, you guys may get it before we do.
And so, you know, then instead of sending, because there's a couple counties out west that have already sent in their you know, paperwork via registered mail.
Mm-hmm.
Hold off till I hear what's going on there before I would do our paperwork.
Well, you definitely want to get all your paperwork together. As far as filing, I would say get talking to the other counties and get some meetings. Do it on Skype. You don't have to do it in person. I mean, it's okay. Nice to do it in person.
I have a Skype account, but
we had a nice big meeting. Our first meeting together was 17 counties, I think it was, and we met in New York City. It might have been 16 counties. It was 17. And we met in New York City physically, and it was a nice meeting. It was good to have everyone come together and meet everybody, each other, and so on and so forth. But it's not necessary. You could do this on Skype or someplace. Talk with the other counties, the other leaders in the other counties. Get the feel. Start to discuss among yourselves when do we all think should be the time that we want to file.
Yeah, but they already, John, they already filed. They already sent them in.
Yeah, but he hasn't yet. Have you done it yet?
I have not sent mine in yet. I know that.
No, but how many of them sent them in?
I think like three or four.
Right.
Out with Hagen.
Yeah, you need to get the rest of them together. You got 10, and all now at this point, since some have filed, I would say all 10 of you need to file.
That's what I was going to say. The point is, if they already started, you need to open the floodgate.
Yeah, jump in there, jump in there. And anybody else who gets elected after, pile in and communicate and get to know these people.
So not wait until Hagen's response is back from
at this
it's going to sit there anyway.
Yeah, at this point, no. They need to see it's popping all over the place. And
That's what I thought, but I wanted to make sure.
Yeah, no, and then you can continue to do other counties will keep popping. You see, that there's a pressure in that. That's the point I'm trying to make. There's a pressure in each county getting constituted, sending their paperwork in because, you know, look, it's like they're sitting there looking out the window and there's one popping there, and then there's one popping behind them. They're all of a sudden they're feeling surrounded, you know, and they're going to – and this has got to be a movement of the people. And what the paperwork does is it documents the fact that we have all these people in all these different counties. And I don't give a crap if it's only four people in every county. The fact of the matter is you are a unified mind and a unified force. And they don't know what you have. And when it comes time to constitute, listen, potentially you can have thousands and thousands of people. And they got to know that.
Yeah.
So I would go ahead and file them and then keep trying to go further.
Yeah, most of the counties right now are in the west with out towards Hagen and Butler County, but we have a couple counties here on the east side. Lancaster is one of them, so I'll try to talk with the other organizers and maybe in the east side, and we can all do it on the same day.
Believe me, the whole state is talking, and they know every county that filed already.
That's right. They're communicating.
They're all communicating.
As soon as you start filing, they're communicating.
No, they all know, and so the best thing to do is keep it going now. Either flood them with four or five more, or just let them get another one every week or something, you know, however you think the best strategy is, you know.
When we did it and we started sending memos to the clerks because the judges were sending memos to the clerks telling them not to do things, we were sending memos to the clerk letting them know what the truth was. Matter of fact, I'm going to send a memo out this week to the clerks, all the clerks. But, you see, once that started happening, you know, we found out from someone who knew someone else in the system, the clerks were like checking every hour, anything new coming in, what's going on, any other new words, so on and so forth, especially when we started to make our tour, okay, of the counties, you know, trying to get access into the courts. So they were very involved. They know something's up, and they know in your state now, so pile on. Anything else?
That's everything.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Next one is Kenneth Hunt. Kenneth, you're on.
Hey, Kenneth.
Hello?
Hello, how you doing, Kenneth?
I didn't really have a question. I kind of answered it. I was calling the other county organizers, trying to find out if anybody wanted to step to the plate, and doesn't look like it, so I guess I'm going to step to the plate with the hope that we can get more information.
Okay, so you're going to become the state coordinator?
Yeah, it looks like it. I'm calling
What state?
My concern is that there might be people that are joining the organization from our state and we have no way of knowing who those people are until we have a state coordinator.
Right.
And we may actually have a state coordinator in that list of people, so I'm going to step to the plate temporarily.
Yeah, that's good. You know,
if anybody wants to take over, cool.
Yeah. All right, what state are you in?
I'm state of Hawaii.
Oh, great.
Oh, that was what I was going to say. You must have been in the text chat then, because I was going to bring that up. You asked how you get a hold of the names from the other people.
Yeah, I'll put it in. Let's get Hawaii going. We want to get things happening in Hawaii and also Alaska. We got Alaska on board, too.
Yeah, John, so, I want to take a trip out there to help
you with
we'll give
you the best support we can. You know, I've been asked,
when it gets real cold here, we'll be out.
Yeah, I've been asked to go out to California to talk to people, but
we'll suffer through our normal 80-degree temperature.
Yeah, I'm sure you will.
Thanks a lot.
But, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and list that. I've got one more person to call. I've talked to a couple of the people that are listed as county organizers, and just kind of making sure I'm not stepping on any toes. So
no, forget about looking. No. That's not how things work. Things work. You see something open. There's a void. It needs to be filled. You think you can qualify for it. You believe you can, or at least try. And nobody else is stepping up to it. Then just step up and take it. I'm here only because
I
stepped up and did it.
It's a small island. Eagles get bruised here easily.
I was not voted in or anything to the position or the things we're doing. We just saw the process needed to be done, and we stepped up and did it. And we were only doing New York, and when we saw that people wanted to do it in other states, then we just took on the national thing, too, and we're just doing it. I didn't ask for it.
Well, we'll definitely finalize the state issue by tomorrow, one way or the other.
Okay, whoever –
a few more calls.
All right, well, there are other people signed in. I don't know about Hawaii, but there are other people signed in also in the background that haven't that you don't know about. In other words, they're in the registry on the inside. They didn't put their number on the page for the county leaders.
Yeah, that's what he's talking about.
So,
he wants those names.
Yeah, I will give you if you give me a state leader, I will give – as often as you ask for it, we will give you a copy of all those people. All you have to do is once I get your name on the board – all you have to do is send a letter to support at nationallibertyalliance.org requesting a copy of all of the people on the registry and just tell them you're the state coordinator. And when he goes out and sees your name as the state coordinator, he'll send you a list of those people with their phone numbers, and then you can call them for the elections and see if they want to get – you know, a lot of people don't mind getting involved. They just don't want their name on the board, and that's fine.
Yeah, I know that I've been involved in enough things that they're always afraid the top person is going to get shot, and I'm fine with that.
Right. So. Yeah, me too. I mean, look at if we spend our time worrying about that, we're not going to do anything. We'll be too frightened. We know that there's these are Nazis and commies, and we're better off stepping up now and doing what has to be done so that we can stop these bastards before they start marching down our streets and killing us off. So.
That's exactly right. So it's always a great day to die. I'd rather die on my knees, on my feet than on my knees. So
yeah.
Right.
But, we'll take care of that. We'll definitely have either myself or somebody will be state coordinator by tomorrow. I just have to make a few more phone calls. But, yeah, I just figure that there's probably people that have signed up and, you know, worst thing that happens, they don't get contacted and they get frustrated and it's just another – yeah, what we were going to do type thing. So
right.
I want to get that rolling here. We have a lot of interesting issues in Hawaii, to say the least.
Yeah, well, I hear you, and we're happy to have Hawaii on board. I was amazed when I saw Hawaii come on. And, by the way, North Dakota and Vermont aren't on yet. Come on, North Dakota and Vermont. We got Hawaii and Alaska.
Yeah,
you know? that'll make a difference.
Them.
All right. Well, as I said, either it'll be me or somebody, but it'll be official tomorrow. So
I appreciate
it. your taking the call.
All right. Godspeed. Thank you. Who's next, Rod?
Joe Kelly. Go ahead, Joe. You're unmuted.
Mr. Joe, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
If we complain, no one listens. So we're doing fantastic.
Great. I was trying to explain things. People who want to know, and you guys are going so far forward, it's almost to the point where you have to find an enforcer.
Mm-hmm. And, believe me, we have things that we cannot talk about because we don't want them to know what knowledge we have to begin with. We do have things of that nature. We can't talk about it. It just is not wise to do it. And when we feel that we're at that point, we'll do it. We're not at that point. We want to do this people thing. That's the real enforcement. And that's where we're at the moment, and I think it's going to happen. So, but we have, look at, we knew Coahuanto was going to be one of the things we were going to do at some point. We didn't know when or anything, and we finally made the decision this is the time for it, and we did it. Now we have other things. We have numerous things, and I can't list them because we just can't let the
animals. And don't forget that there's enforcement out there that's just waiting in the wings for a popular movement. Because, listen, these guys don't want to be the ones charging up the hill with their sword out and have nobody behind them. There's people in places of authority, but they can't act without people behind them. You understand what I'm saying?
Trust me, so, there's a lot of people out there that have not even don't even come onto this call and have very different kinds of titles.
Well,
and
we want
involvement.
Right.
When the time
the media
is right.
Has to hit this. We want this to hit the media, and it has to go out there. And then you're going to see a big. There'll be a lot of opportunities after that. And I mean, it's not. We are working on it.
Our job right now is to get grand juries in every county. Trust me,
right.
If we can get a majority of grand juries throughout the nation, get the majority of the counties up, trust
right.
me when I tell you there's huge things behind us. I'm telling
right.
you, very, very right. big things. I'm blown away by what I see and hear, but some of it I take with a grain of salt, but nevertheless. But there's also processes that we are going to be going through, and we're not going to reveal them. They think that we don't know what we're doing. But every time they make the wrong move, they're putting themselves further and further into the box, and they're starting. They got it by now. Tomorrow morning or the next day when they receive this paper from us, because we send it through certified mail to the clerk, they should receive it tomorrow at about 11, 12 o'clock. And when they receive that, it's going to get throughout. Everybody in the state's going to know before the day is out that they got that paper, and they're going to understand we understood the next step. This Coahuanto is huge for anybody who understands the Coahuanto and understands how we wrote it and what we put in it and the questions we asked and required for them to answer. So let's give this to 10 days, and the pressure is being built on. We need more and more grand juries to surface. We have the potential here in New York State of getting about 12 to 18 more grand juries up and running in the next week or two. I got to get onto that because we have spoken to people who are going to do them in clusters, okay, where they're going to do 3, 4, or 5 elections in one place at one time because they can get a nice central location of numerous counties and we can do a bunch of them at the same time. And that'll be huge to have more numbers coming up to get another 12 or 10 grand mal juries to add on to our 19. That'll bring us up to 20 or 30. Once we get to 31, we're halfway through the state. That's pretty potent. So, anything else, Joe?
Yeah, I have a whole lot of other things, but what you had reminded me of is if you have something that's wrong, like what I was seeing with your latest move there in editing, there was a lack of a parentheses.
Right.
And my idea there was, if you are told by the people you're offering these legal notices to that your offer of a legal notice is not correct in grammar, then you can say, thanks for the pro bono editing help. I'll make an adjustment, and there you go.
Well, let me tell you, you should see their paperwork.
Yeah.
You want to talk about atrocities? We are, goodness, what's the highest level we can think of? I mean, look, these guys,
well,
they're,
no, they're like
kindergartners.
Yeah,
like
of the stuff they send out is unbelievable. I mean, and we know that from being in the court for 4 years.
Right.
And the reason is they don't, they're not used to writing papers, and they're not used to reading papers, because the bulk of law today is done in the back room between the lawyers and the judges. It's all talking and handshakes and let's see how much money we can split up. They don't really practice law anymore, per se, and they really don't do a lot of writing, at least not in the sections where we've been, like family court and criminal court and town court. And, you know, you bring a stack of papers in, and, oh, they get sick. I think they want to get nauseous and throw up because they don't even want to read it. So just the nature of the beast. They've gotten lazy through the years, you know. And plus, they don't teach them very much in law school. You know, they don't teach them procedure in law school. They got to learn that. You know, that's kind of like a on-the-job training thing. You know, it's like an apprenticeship. And so that's kind of like the secret rubrics handed down. And not every attorney, you know, really takes to it like a duck to water. You know, so you get all different varying degrees of abilities out there, and most of it is pretty sad. I'll tell you what, I was in a case with Citibank and their lawyers. I was not impressed. I kept saying to the judge, I said, this is the bank that's too big to fail? I said, look at this stuff. You know, I mean, that poor judge, I had him sliding down under the table. I don't know how many times when I went in there. Every time I went in there, I picked another something. We all met and we said, oh, say this or say that. One sentence I went in, a different like something to hit him with, like, you know, a tweet or whatever you want to call it. And that was enough. It made a difference, believe me.
And when these guys bring in the Supreme Court cases, they don't even read them well enough, because they help us, because they're giving us the case that they think says one thing. It actually says something else. So we've turned, a couple of times, we've turned their cases against them. So,
yeah, they're pretty bad. Yeah. Sometimes they'll quote law, and then you go in and look at the case they quoted, and it actually fits, it actually speaks for our battle. You know, they took something out of context. And we went in and read it. We said, oh, thank you very much. By the way, here's the rest of that case. And yeah, thank you. We're going to use it because it fits us.
Anything else, Joe?
Yeah, still lots more. In the interest of accurate accounting, when you were speaking about King John and the barons, I don't think it was Magna Carta or we're going to cut your head off. I think it was Magna Carta or we are no longer protecting you, because I think you put the cart before the horse there. Mm-hmm. And that moves back into my concept of you keep repeating save the Republic, and if you're going to do that, you're saving your state. You're not saving the Federation. And if you're going to save the Republic...
Well, you're right, but you have to save your state first. Collectively, once we all save our states... we've saved the Federation. Am I still here?
Yeah.
I hear you.
Oh, okay. Anything else, okay, Joe?
Yeah, I was trying to say something, and you interrupted.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So if you're going to save the state, and this is now a question, I put up the links that are relevant. If you're going to save the state, then you're going to call upon the sheriff. If you're going to save the Federation, then you're going to call upon the marshal. Is that not true?
Well, yes and no. Here's the thing. You see, what we discovered to save everything is, let me explain something. This country is being taken down, and it's happening by a statement that was made even before our country came into being by Rothschild himself, the father of the five children. And he said, give me control of a nation's money, and I don't care who makes the laws. I'm going to control everything. And that's a true statement. But what he left out was that before he can do that, he also had to control the courts. He had to control the judges. If he can't control the judges, he can't control the money. He may think he can, but I know he knows he can't. He couldn't. And you see, once you take your local court back and turn it into common law, you then took the federal courts that are in your state back to common law, and you also brought them to courts of justice, because you now are the not only the grand juries, but we the people are also the trial juries. When you do that in every county of your state, you've now taken back the republic in the state. And you've done this by taking back the judge, the prosecutor, the sheriff, and the whole system at that point, and also all your local politicians that touch your county, you hold them accountable. And they can't break the law no more. They can't be going out voting for special interest groups, because that's selling the vote. That's fraud. They can't go out and vote on things that are against the Constitution, because we will remove them from office. So once you've done that in your state, and Jersey did it, and Connecticut did it, and Texas did it, and Florida did it, and California did it, and Nevada did it, it's done. You everything is taken back by the courts. We don't even have to go to remove the Bar Association. That's going to disappear on its own, because nobody's going to be – these lawyers, their statutes are not going to work in the courts of common law anymore. And so they'll start leaving in the droves, because if they want to stay in the business, they're going to have to move over and bone up on common law. Okay? And so they're going to have to shift their whole concept and understanding. And they'll be behind the eight ball on that. People like us will move in a lot quicker. But people will start to learn, I don't need a lawyer. I go to court myself. We're going to teach our children. You know, the eighth grade test that we share all the time, and it is available up online. If anybody wants to see that eighth grade test, I'll get to it. I'll negotiate my way there in a minute. But this eighth grade test is so huge. It's above our college level, or at least on the highest level of our college level. And they achieved the college level that we have and went beyond that in 8 years. Okay? So a child doesn't need to go to school any more than 8 years. They can get their education. Of course, if you're going to be a doctor or something like that, you there's an extended education. But other than that, people were pretty bright. When they could pass these tests, they were pretty darn bright. Now, our education has gone downhill. There's no reason why we can't go back to bringing our children through a full education within 8 years. And when they come out of it, they understand the process, the political process and the judicial process. And an eighth grader should be able to come out of school and walk into a courtroom and defend themselves. They don't need a lawyer, because their heritage depends on their knowledge of common law. And it's that simple. All they need to learn is procedure. And they need to learn about our founding fathers. They need to learn about maxims and natural law. These are all simple concepts. They're very interesting. They're obvious. They're logical. It's common sense. And it's power. And so we will teach our children. So all of that will disappear. A lot of things will just disappear, because once you fix the root of the problem, you're cutting off all the dead branches. It'll fall off on themselves anyway. And that includes on the federal level. You see, if everyone corrects their congressman, we got 27 congressmen, and we got two senators. So if we correct our congressmen and we correct our senators and we let them know what the law of the land is, and they better behave when they're in Washington, and every state is doing the same thing, you just took back Washington. So it's a no-brainer. This is so simple. It's so simple. It's all just dealing with the principles at the grassroots level, and everything gets fixed. Anything else, Joe?
Yes, still a lot more, but I'll try to cut it short for other people.
Okay, so, we appreciate
the
that.
The concept.
Go ahead.
What?
Yeah, no, I appreciate but that. Go ahead.
The concept, when you say king, I think a lot of people don't understand what you mean by that, and I think I do understand what you mean by that, is either or, everybody is a king or everybody is a slave.
That's a fact.
Right. So you can change that word king, which may convey confusion, because you're not trying to become the slave master.
Right. Yeah, we try to use the word people.
Okay, so I'm going to try to finish this, okay?
Right.
So the concept could be conveyed in the word peers. And peers could be understood as things that are not rocks, things that are not babies, things that are not children, things that are not insane people, things that are not infirm people. Things that are not wild animals and mad dogs. Things that are capable of, and this is a human being, that is capable of promising by some means, like an oath, to say, yes, anybody who wants to listen, I am capable of understanding the difference between everybody is a peer who is capable of an oath. And those who decide to raise themselves above everybody else are easily recognized as criminals. And that's it. That's
well,
all
that's
my
true.
Look,
you know, there's going to be a transition period where people are frightened of liberty. They really are. I'm telling you, these people are, you take these lawyers and stuff, they've been frightened so much by their education, they're frightened of liberty. So they're going to remain a slave for quite some time. It's a whole group of people that will remain as slaves. And really, they're really just people who decide not to exercise their unalienable rights. But most people, or a lot of people that are, you know, because freedom is popular, and as people wake up to this, they're going to grab onto it and they're going to become free. Freedom starts as, freedom is a state of mind, okay? First you have to think free, then you have to speak free, act it out, and then you're free, okay? And it doesn't matter whether they pull a bullet in your head, you still died free because it's a state of mind. And that's where we have to get to. So everybody has this opportunity. And we treat everybody, we need to treat everybody as if they're king of their own kingdom, whether they know it or not. And everybody has the right to defend themselves and to exercise their rights. It's up to them to do it. But other than that, it is what it is. But I like the word people, but I do use the word king from point to point because it's an important concept to make that we are the kings. We ordained, we established. Who? The kings. Only a king ordains, only a king establishes this constitution. For who? For the government, for the United States of America. So from that standpoint, we are kings, and we're identified as the people. We, the people. So, but I appreciate what you're saying, and so I like to use the word people. Peerage is good too, you know, but, you know, I'm not... slaves are not my peers. I wouldn't want them, someone with a slave's mind, sitting on a jury because they're not my peerage if I was being tried for something. I want someone with a free mind. That's my peerage, and I want them on my jury should I ever have to be tried for anything. So, but that's just a transition period of time. At some point when we teach everyone the responsibility of liberty through our schools and we ourselves learn it better as a people, we'll get there as long as we keep striving towards that point. That's all it is. Just keep moving towards that point. Let's go. We're going to get there. All right, let's move on, and we'll come back to you if you want, Joe. You can raise your hand again, all right?
Yeah. Don't go away. Don't go away, David, because I want to discuss that, what you put in the text chat there. He's got some good stuff. David's like four people away.
All right.
And he's got some pretty good stuff to talk about there.
Okay,
so it's Bill Schneider, I guess it is. I'm going to unmute you, Bill.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
We can hear you.
Yeah. This is my first visit with you folks, and I've got to say it's been the most fascinating couple hours that I've ever spent in a long time. And you're blowing me away with your knowledge and what you're doing, and I appreciate it. So much, and I just want to say that.
Well, we appreciate that.
I'm out here in Washington, and we have a lot of our statutes encompass a lot of what you've are saying and trying to achieve. And I don't know if you've looked at Washington. Specifically, but
we have people in Washington that we communicate often.
Yeah, and I've been at, Veronica, I guess, is out here, and she's given me a call, and I hope to be able to offer her some assistance. But the point I want to try to make is I'm the quo warranto. I've got two cases. Already in the courts. One is in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and it's a quo warranto action. And it got to the Ninth Circuit because it's a long story. But the point that I want to try to get to is that the people, the judges, the system.
Are you in the court as a plaintiff or a defendant?
Plaintiff.
Okay.
I lost my thought. Okay, here the issue is this: the reason it gets to the to the appellate division is because the judges and the lawyers that are on the defense side, and this is all this case is me against a corrupt judge and a corrupt county. I mean, it's all against county or state officials. So I'm the citizen being a citizen against these officials. And the reason it's in the Court of Appeals is because the local, the state folks exercise their powers in a way to simply poo-poo anything a citizen brings up.
Right, but bear in mind, they have rules by which they do that. Have you read Lost at Sea?
No.
Okay. We should have that up on our judicial page. You need to read Lost at Sea. You need to understand where you're at and who you're fighting against, and you have to understand that they're under a corporate charter. That's what they're acting under, and you are acting under the Constitution. That's order and oil. And unless you understand how to control the court in as far as what jurisdiction you're in and where your battle is, and define who you are and what you're doing, and define also in a very subtle way that you know who they are, and then define it from the language of being lost at sea, only then do you have a chance of winning that case.
I agree with you.
Yourself a citizen in a court, you just put yourself into their jurisdiction under the 14th Amendment, and that's unfortunate. Now, you have to call yourself one of the people, and you need to define that as under the Constitution, particularly the preamble. And there's other things. You know, we have a lot of paperwork to share. Hang on 1 minute. Let me I'm going to just mute you for a second while I'm talking because I'm hearing an echo. I'll unmute you in a minute. But we do have a lot of paperwork. We used to have it up, a lot of court cases. And we didn't put it back up only because of time mostly, but then also I want to go through all that paperwork and I want to sort of, clean out all the names of different people in there, and then we'll put the cases back up there for people to use as a framework. We have some really good, powerful paperwork that we've been writing over the years in all kinds of cases, IRS cases, family court cases, traffic court. We even, of course, some constitutional issues and arguments in the Second Amendment and so on. We just have tons of stuff to really put up there. And but I got to go through it, and I got to find the time to do that. And then people can go up and gleam off of this, and you can take down our cases and use it as framework. And really, if you look at court systems, when you build your cases, you're really building your case. I build modulus, okay? I have different positions that I want to make in my case, and I have them in modulus, and I put them into my cases. So I'm able to construct a case relatively quickly. And, of course, it was experience and time doing to get those modulus together. But once you understand how you can run a case and you understand the principles of these modulus or positions that you're making within your paper, it may be 3, 4, 5, or 6 paragraphs or 1 or 2 or 3 pages to make a point and then another point, and it's sort of like memorandums or at law of law, then you can kind of put your case together very powerfully. But you do have to understand that you are lost at sea, and you're at sea when you're in those courtrooms. And they will follow their own rules. And when they understand that you understand what they're doing and that you're playing ball with them on their terms and yet still holding their feet to the fire on the constitutional level, that they're going to be held liable because they took an oath and they're defrauding you. And now a whole different ballgame starts to arise in that courtroom on the federal level. But it's very touchy. You're moving from jurisdiction to jurisdiction as the arguments go, and you have to understand that. So if you're representing yourself, it's really tough, and if you get a lawyer, he's just going to sell you down the road anyway. Now, that was Bill. Yeah, let me unmute you now.
Unmuted. Yeah, I agree 100%, and I think I did a pretty good job of crossing the T's and dotting the I's. But I wanted to get to this point. Someone asked you that there has to be an enforcer, and if if the good old boy network, and you know what I mean by the good old boy network, is so tight, it's going to come down to an enforcer issue.
Well, let me give you a thought on this. Let me just mute you while I talk because I keep hearing myself. The enforcer of the Magna Carta was 25 men. The enforcer of the Declaration of Independence was 56 men. The enforcer today in our time of bringing back the common law grand jury in order that we can set the judicial and the political clocks back to 1789 again and start all over with a clean slate and build something and really nice, the enforcer for that is 3,141 grand juries. That's the enforcer. Now, I think we'll do that long before that. In New York, I think it's going to be 40 or 50 common law grand juries. When we go past that half mark, that's when they know they've had it. But we also have to get the press. It's going to be the court of public opinion. And the people, 1,000 people outside that courthouse with flash cameras going off and on and the videotapes rolling and the hard questions asked, that's when they're going to collapse. I'm convinced of that. But if we have to go to the next step, there is a next step, and it's a step that I don't think we'll have to get to. But if we have to get there, we know how to get there. Let me open you back up.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's that answer was profound, and I agree with it. And but that aside, when you that day before a court, I'd surely like to know a little ahead of time because I'll make the flight from Washington wherever you're going to be on that day. So
well,
thanks
that's
again
dedication,
for
and I appreciate that statement.
Yeah, and I appreciate what you guys are doing. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay, moving right along, we got Johnny B. Michael.
Johnny B. Michael. I thought you were Johnny.
Hey, guys.
But go ahead, hey. B. Michael.
Come through all right?
Well, you're
yep.
good.
Okay. If you remember, it's been a bit. Sorry, guys. I've been kind of stressed between situations here.
Gotcha.
Did we ever get anywhere on access to the public TV?
Yes. We're moving through that system now. We got the public TV throughout New York City. I mean, all over New York City. We're moving through public TV up here in Dutchess County in two different channels. We're moving in Greene County. We're moving in, we're moving in Woodstock anyway, right, Drew?
Yeah. I've been handing
Long
out
Island.
DVDs to people. I just sent some out with Lil, and she's gonna hand those out.
And we got Long Island. We have Harold working down in Long Island. He's got both of those counties. He's been, matter of fact, he's meeting tonight. He couldn't make it tonight's meeting because I think he's meeting with producers, and he has a machine that runs them off. So he's already printing off, and he is going to be. He's already started accumulating a list of people, not only across the state, but I think also across the country. But we're worried about the state right now here, New York. So he's going to be doing what he can to get the word out to. Producers throughout the entire state in through these different cable locations. So, yeah, we're moving. And
you see, the public access, some of it goes out to the mainstream cable because some of them are rebroadcast onto cable, and that's why the one in Manhattan has a potential 800,000 people. That's not because 800,000 people watch that public TV station. What it is they're rebroadcasting it on the cable vision. And so that's one way that we'll get out. And by the way, there's some of those DVDs, the TV ones, up on the site. And there's also the interviews that John's been doing on the radio, which we had a real fantastic result from on an international, radio station. It was kind of like an Art Bell thing where they transmit internationally on shortwave, but then they're rebroadcast all over the place. And my goodness, what do we have, John? Like 1,700 hits or something?
Over 1,800.
Right.
We picked up
like 138 people.
Damn.
Absolutely.
And
so it's starting. It is starting.
Right, but I'm working here in Kansas, and most of the people I'm speaking with, it's amazing. I'm getting more contacts from Oklahoma, Nebraska, Iowa, Missouri, but nobody in Kansas.
Well, that's good anyway.
It works. It works.
Yeah, that's good anyway.
But I was just wondering if we had any kind of guidelines on how to breach the wall, as it were, to get the public access to the local TV station.
Yeah, well, we're pushing it out, and look, what it's going to take is this. It's going to take we the people, everyone in this room, and everyone that they have influence over that's in the system to tell them to, you know, let's look at, we have well, oh goodness, 1,200, 1,500 people, 1,400, I don't remember the numbers. It's over 1,200, I know that, that's recorded on our registry. But we have a lot more than that. But not all of them come to the meetings, and this is so important for people to come to the meetings and hear. But I do know a lot of people that say that they can't come, and they do listen to these programs afterwards, so they can gleam there. This is the key thing, is to become educated or re-educated. We have to get the word out to the newspapers. We have to get the word out to the blogs. We have to get the word out through email and radio. Notify Glenn Beck. People should send emails to Glenn Beck. Send emails to Alex Jones. There's a woman. What's the name of that woman that has a pretty big radio program, Gerard?
I don't
just
remember.
Just a little smaller than Jones. She's got She's nationwide. She's got a huge. And we're trying to get onto her program. But anyone you know, get the bloggers going. Get the radios going. Get the newspapers going. Get the people going. Just keep getting the word out. If you notice, I try to send out emails, you know, a couple of week at least, and do a press release. And you can look at the breaking news. I mean, we did a press release today, November 4th. The one before we did was October 31st, then October 25th, October 28th, October 23rd, October 22nd, October 21st. Okay? So we release a lot of – we got to keep releasing and getting this out to the people. So that's the key.
Hey, John, her name's Joyce Riley on the Power Hour, and I tried to call her today, and they just keep telling me the same thing. Send an email.
The voice from the heavens. Okay, gotcha, Jay.
Well, experience tells me that it is hard to get a hold of Joyce, and there seems to be a screener that you have to work through with the emails. And what you can do is call the Power Mall. That's her shop,
Can you do that for us too, Johnny?
If you call the Power Mall after 10 a.m. Central, you might catch her in there where you can actually speak with her without having to go through a screener.
Yeah, I did that today, and they said, she's not here, and we know
it's Well, I'm pushing on
them. Is there any way I could just talk to Joyce to give her a heads up on this? Because we sent her a couple of emails. And we've left a message, and these guys really need exposure right now. And she basically just said, send an email. I call them all the time, and her screener is the powercat@gmail.com.
Right.
The right. Power Hour Cat.
You got to listen. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'll climb back on the saddle, guys, and see if I can't get back in there and raise the voice again.
Yeah, see, everybody should be calling newspapers,
local,
radio programs, everybody, get out there, send emails, get blogs.
This old guy that was a veterans advocate. He was in his 80s, and he's dead now, God rest his soul, but he would go around and to the veterans hospital and visit all these veterans that nobody was visiting. And he wanted to get into a congressman's office, and this guy was so tenacious. He called the office, and he'd ask for the congressman, and they'd go, he's not here. He said, what are you talking about? I just got off the phone with him. They said, you did? And they put him on. He goes, this is Joe Paul. About time I got you on the damn phone. Well, the guy was so impressed with him, he met with him. But that was the tactic he used. I just got off the phone with him, so get creative.
Absolutely. Well, that's all I got, guys.
Okay, thanks.
Let's move on. I know Jacqueline has been raising their hand up and down, so they may have lost their timing. Let's try Jacqueline. Is that how you say that?
You're skipping David. David's got some good stuff. Yes. I want to hear.
All right, well, let's take Jacqueline real quick, and then we can come back to Jacqueline. Go ahead.
Hi, John. Good night. Thank you very much for what you are doing. I've been fighting in court, following the due process. I'm a victim of larceny. You know, they took half acre of my property and falsified the documents.
Yeah, I know someone they're doing that to right now down in Brooklyn. Where did this happen to you?
In Florida.
In Florida. Yeah, it's the mafia or something working out there, and they got a deal going with these judges. There's a lot of money going on. And yeah, we're trying to help someone, but go ahead.
The great thing is that I hire a lawyer, and I find out that he was with them.
Yeah, of course. They always are. Once they come in, the judge puts a wink and a nod and a handshake, and you're done. They're just going to hang you around for a couple of years, rape you with as much money as they can get, and then you're going to lose your property, and they're going to throw you to the dogs, and you're not going to know what happened.
Yeah, well, they thought that I will get tired and I will quit. But I learned about our Constitution and what we have. And even though that I was alone with no lawyers, but we are not alone. I am not alone because I have our Lord in my side.
Right.
And he is the best lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
So he taught me how to fight them, and I went from the circuit court, I went to the Court of Appeals. By the way, you were talking about the sheriff. The mm-hmm. due process, I went to the sheriff demanding that he file my complaint of larceny as his duty, and I always treat them. You're talking about King, which I agree with you, and all the other caller that says Spears. But I like to call myself, as we the people, I am the boss.
That's right.
I am your boss. Like I am your king, and you and I, we are bound by the same supreme law of the land, which is the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went to the sheriff, I demanded him to take my claim against the judge. Because he's the judge who took my land.
Right.
You know? So from there, the Constitution and the rule of law says that you got to go to the Court of Appeals. I went to the Court of Appeals, and the five judges defend the judge. So I took them also as larceny, and I enforced them to go to the Supreme Court, and I appealed to the Supreme Court in Florida. And when the Supreme Court denied the Constitutions that nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property. They cannot take a property without the grand jury or without the jurors, mm-hmm. you know, because that's what the Constitution demands. When they didn't do that, then we have the fifth section of the Constitution in the Amendment 14 that says Congress shall have power to enforce this article, that you don't lose your property, your life, or your liberty. So I went to Congress, I went to Washington, and I also went to the DOJ, Attorney General Holder, and I went to the Congressman Marco Rubio and Boehner and all the politicians in charge in the Judiciary Committee. So I demanded them to obey the oath, to obey the Constitution. And when I went with papers making them to sign. So to make the story short, now I am on the point that I find out that our founding fathers gave us the grand tool on we the people that we can control the three branches through the grand jury.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And here in Florida, we have a beautiful law, the Statute 90511, telling us we the people how the grand jury works.
How long have you been with us? Did you just join up with us?
I just joined up, and I have a friend that is listening here that he sent me through the Facebook.
Okay, there are, we have a lot of people in Florida. You need to tie in with these people in Florida. You can get their names and phone numbers right here. If you look on, you're on the internet, aren't you? You see my browser?
Yes.
If you click on the left side, it says county organizers, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you go down to Florida, all right? Uh-huh. And you click on Florida. Let's see, where's Florida? Here's Florida. Click on Florida, and and now there's 44 people working in Florida. Even if they're not in your county, you need to connect with these people. Now, there's a guy down there. His name is Hagen Smith. You definitely got to give him a call and communicate with him. And it seems that you may have certain knowledge that these people will benefit from. And, of course, there's power in numbers, and they have knowledge, and you need to work together with these people and develop Florida and show them what you have and what you know, and let's take back Florida.
I will. If you want to, you can take a look on my webpage.
Okay, what's your webpage?
The documents.
What's your webpage?
One letter, St. Augustine Tea Party.com.
St. Augustine Tea Party.com.
AugustineTeaParty.com. Okay, I'll take a look. All right, let me go over to Dave. If you want to talk some more, I'll unmute you in a short. But well, go ahead. You want to finish up? Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to finish it up that when you go to my webpage, on the bottom of the first page, you will see the index. Click on index. And then you can go by date on links by dates. And when I went to the sheriff, when I went to the FBI, when I went to the Congress, there is by dates all the papers that I found and that I filed. And you can see that they stamp it and they know that they breached the Constitution.
That's great. That's great. And what was the conclusion? You got your property back, or what happened?
No, no, I'm fighting, and now I told him I went to the clerk of the court, and it's his duty to give me the list of the persons of the grand jury in Florida. That they, and then I will get. I think there is where providentially I met with you guys. Mm-hmm. Having your information because I was looking for grand juries.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can try the grand juries that exist. I don't know that you'll get access to them. There's one guy down there, claimant, I think it's his name. What county is he in, Gerard? Do you remember? That guy doing the citizens' grand juries. Claimant. There's a guy down there named claimant, and if you just run his name, you'll get it. Now, he's not us. He's not us, but I know he's doing some good work. You can kind of try to approach him. He might help you. And meanwhile, help develop the grand juries of the people, which is the common law grand juries. We're going to take over the process and bring these courts of injustice back to justice. These judges will never be able to get away with this again. Once the people take back their states.
Yeah. And what you are saying, that we have the power to do it through the rule of law.
That's right.
This is it. It's the grand jury. We don't need no violence.
We don't
need no guns.
That's right.
And even in Florida, we have a law that we can take the guns if we need to. But we don't have to because we have the grand jury.
Right. Well, talk to those people. Look up Hagen Smith particularly and talk with him. He's in Pennsylvania right now, but his phone number's up there. You'll get him. And
Larry Klayman, K-L-A-Y-M-A-N is the guy that you were trying to tell him about.
Okay.
He's in Marion County, Florida.
Okay. Is there anything else? Jacqueline, how do you pronounce your name?
Joaquin.
Joaquin. Okay, anything else?
Yeah, I would like to very short thank our Lord for what you are doing.
Oh, please, go right ahead. Amen.
You guys are doing excellent. We the people don't know what is the grand jury. A lot of people, I ask them if they know what our founding father gave us to the grand jury. They don't know. They think it's a court. It's part of the court.
That's right, they do. It's unfortunate. We've been all sides. Look at they've been working on us for a long time, brainwashing us, and we're waking up to that. Now we're cleaning all that crap out of our head, and we're getting knowledge now.
Keep doing it. You're doing excellent.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Good night.
Good night. All right. David's next.
Yeah, David. Well, hang on. I'll unmute him here. Okay, David, you're up.
Okay, I appreciate that. I was just putting in the question box some thoughts as John was talking. I agree with Joaquin of what an excellent job you guys are doing there in New York. We were on a conference call that's been going on for 6 years out of Evanston, Illinois. It's a nationwide conference call similar to this, but it covers a lot more topics than just the law. And just to give you the scope of it, over the years that Obama has been in question to be in, eligible to be president based on the birth certificate and all that, every one of the attorneys who brought a suit against him have been on that call. So we could personally ask them questions. I'm not bringing that up as a topic. I'm just saying that over the 6 years, every Thursday night at 9 o'clock, there's a AUNetwork.tv call. And last week, we talked quite a bit about this. And I even think that, weren't you a guest on that program at one time in the recent past, John?
Possibly. I've been on a lot of programs, and
okay.
I just don't remember half of them. So.
Anyway, the more narrow topic within what you're talking about here is how do we get the right to hold the common law county grand jury proceedings without being overrun at the local level by some ruling? And it seems to me that the missing piece of the puzzle, and it's a procedural one, is an extraordinary writ of the writ of mandamus.
Uh-huh.
And your state law, passed by the state legislature, has created rules for how that happens, and that needs to be researched by everyone listening to this call who wished to not have the problems in New York. I think, I'm guessing, that you've not used that procedure, and this involves the Chief Justice of the state.
We have used this. We've used it. And we know the process.
Okay. It's my guess. I don't live in New York. I've spent most of my life, or legal life, in Michigan. I'm in Iowa now. But the difficulty when you get a wrongful answer from a Supreme Court justice in a writ of mandamus, then it puts a real hurt on those 15 counties there in New York that are still trying to have one. And I'm not agreeing with you completely, John, that it's a matter of numbers. There is something to be said for that. But in the founding of this nation, we did not depend on a majority to fight the war.
Well, that's exactly correct, yes.
Only 3% of the people, of the 3 million people living then, were directly involved in the war. Mm-hmm. And actually, it was a war of aggression by King George the Third hired mercenaries, Homeland Security guys, you know, who were interfering and in the peace and life of the colonists who had certain inalienable rights. And similarly, it is today. We have a federal government that has gotten away from us and is telling the states and the counties what to do, and there's no appeal. Now, is there still a rule of law process as opposed to something which is legal? That's exactly what's being explored by what you're doing. And for any state that has not taken the steps of New York, it would seem to me that there's some advantage to improving the serve of whatever you did do in the procedure that you went about in New York to create that writ of mandamus. Incidentally, writ of mandamus is not a court case.
Yeah, let me talk about this. I understand it's not a court case. You know, first of all, we really teach that we need between 3,000 and 12,000, which is not very many people, in order to take the entire nation back. But, of course, we're going to need a little more than that to get involved. But the serious people, we only need between 3,000 to 4,000, 3,000 to 12,000. We need at least a bare minimum of one person per county to execute the reconstitution and the declaration of a common law grand jury within that county. we teach that ultimately you want to drive towards four people at some point, but it doesn't have to be right away. But you do want to get four active people, because that's really what you kind of need to go out and do investigations, and probably the amount of people you're going to need in order to do all the administrative work and the orientation of all the individuals. And so those four people have to start to pick up their understanding of the process and of common law procedure, and really come to an appreciation of the principles, because they have to deliver that to every single person that comes into the system to sit as a trial jurist or a grand jurist. So we're not teaching that we really need big numbers. But we do need, you know, hundreds or perhaps even 1,000 people at that courthouse on our first time when we're going with the press and everyone else, because that's impressive. They know, look, if 1,000 people show up, they know there's a lot more behind them, 15, 20, 30,000, you know, easily for that many people show up, especially on a work day. But as far as a mandamus is concerned, we have a lot of experience in the courts. We've been doing this for quite a few years. We've argued cases and fought cases in the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court. We've been in the federal court. We've been in the town courts. We've been in the family courts, all the traffic courts. And we've had a lot of good results. We've got a lot of cases thrown out, which is a win, because most of the cases are really defendants, and we want to get them out of the court. We haven't had too much in the Supreme Court. They're thoroughly corrupt, so corrupt it's just alarming. But in any event, what they did back in 1933 here in New York is they moved the writs, particularly the habeas corpus, the mandamus, into what's called an Article 78. Now, you can file an Article 78 in a regular Supreme Trial Court, but if you want to get a mandamus or a writ going through, you have to file that Article 78 with the appellate court. In order to do that, you still have to get an index number, a control number. Once you file the control number, it becomes a court case, generally speaking. Now, writ of mandamus, when we filed ours, we were very clear with what we were doing. The Attorney General just had no clue. They probably have never had any experience with a writ of mandamus, because it just doesn't come up and no lawyer will bring it up. And so only someone that's really acting on their own behalf, coming in as one of the people, might bring that up. And then they have to understand the process and the procedure of that writ of Davis and how it go, writ of mandamus and how it goes. We had the court clerk up there that required us to do it a certain way, and we tried to keep the case out of it, because a writ of mandamus has nothing to do with the case at hand, and the judges that are hearing this or considering this writ of mandamus, which is what the writ were petitioning the court for a writ of mandamus. And the court needs to only look at the law that is concerned. We're in the middle of a trial case, and we came to a dead standstill, okay? It took us 9 months, and this is an extraordinary writ. It's only supposed to take 3 to 7 or 10 days to get into the system. But it took us 9 months to get there. The other side poured all kinds of papers in as if we were appealing it. They didn't even understand what we were doing it. And no matter how much we corrected them, they still didn't respond correctly. They probably didn't even read our papers. And when we got up into the appellate court, they didn't understand it, and they looked at it as if it was an appeal, and they threw the whole case out. They just threw the whole damn thing out. Now, I think they knew what we were doing, and they knew what they were doing, and this was a way to get rid of us, because this was a huge case. If we would have won, we would have taken back the entire political process of New York, and there was no way they were going to allow that to happen. So that's why they did that to us. This is even bigger, and they have been trying to pull us into the court since we started. They have even offered us no cost for the index number. They just want us to file something in the court. And once we file something in the court, what they're going to do to us is they're going to take our paperwork. If we filed for a writ of mandamus, they're going to take our paperwork, they're going to call us up there, and then they're going to make a ruling. And they're going to say, you don't have the authority or the right, and it's been done away with a long time ago, lawyers actually believe this anyway, and judges are lawyers, to formulate grand juries here in New York. And they will print that Hughes versus Wood case, which is repugnant to the Constitution and to natural law altogether. And then they will turn to us and they will say, if you or any of your people file another common law grand jury anywhere in New York State, we will find you in contempt of court. And then they're going to put us in jail. And that's what's going to happen. There's no doubt in my mind. They are doing everything to get us before a judge. And it's not going to happen. So anybody in any state that thinks about filing a mandamus. Now, the other thing is the idea we were on a call last night or the night before. I forget when it was or whatever it was. I think it was last night. And they were trying to convince us to go with a mandamus. They didn't want to hear it. So, okay, fine. You don't want to hear it. You do what you want. But we're not teaching that. And I'm not having any part with anybody anywhere that's filing a mandamus. I don't even want them on our site because they're going to destroy what we're doing if they do that and they turn around and use it against us. Right now, to go after the Chief Justice of the Administrative Supreme Court, the Unified Supreme Court here in New York, to go after that person is not even possible because that's the one we indicted. It was that individual and his underling, Prudente, which is also a chief justice, okay, the two highest court judges in the state of New York State are the ones that send out memos to all of the clerks, both on the county level and the court level, to inform them to resist and refuse our papers when we file.
And not only the clerks, everybody.
Yes.
Even all the DAs to the state attorney general, to this one, to that one. I mean, I'm sure it was also an intimidation tactic, but nevertheless, far as we're concerned, it was treason because, you know, they're basically shutting the process out.
To go to the chief judge of New York State or any state is equivalent to sending them a knife and asking them to cut their own throats. Because if they give us what you are asking them to give you, okay, if they give that to you, then the people are coming in, and the people are going to see everything. And believe me, they've got a lot to hide. Now, I know they got a potential in going in on this in Pennsylvania, and it's interesting to see how this is going because they might have some people who are really want to see some changes. And they might be able to get this through, but that I think would be a rare situation. Definitely in New York would be a problem. But when I spoke with Hagen Smith about this because of what he was doing in Pennsylvania, I said, hey, you know, if you got some people that are friendly and they seem to, why take the avenue, go up through the door, do what you got to do. But I also told Hagen, do not file a number, do not get into their court, do not come under their jurisdiction or their authority, because what they're going to do is they're going to get you in contempt. It doesn't matter what they're telling you is illegal, okay? What matters is the fact that they'll have a legal cause because they're saying it's contempt, and it's contempt, and you're going to go to jail. And they will put us to jail for a long time, okay? So I strongly suggest anyone thinking about filing a writ of mandamus, don't do it. And if you do it, you know, kind of disconnect yourself from us and do it on your own. God bless you. You know, we'll give you information, but we don't want a connection. Okay, because we don't want this whole system that we've been working for and planning for and working day and night for to fall into a situation where we get caught into a court case and we'll be there for years.
Okay, you're doing a really good job of sharpshooting what I brought up as a topic here, and I did not have that information of what you actually had done. And of course, the presumption is maybe you had done nothing in that area, or you had done something incorrect.
No, we appreciate what you're bringing up here, because believe me, we did the same thing, and we thought that was the answer, and we shot ourselves in the foot. So we had just like you, we were coming up the process, and we were learning, and now we've learned from the school of hard knocks. We will not do it again. We the people will never come under the jurisdiction of any of these courts because we are above the courts. They're in our jurisdiction. They're in our courts. Think about this one thing. We have the court of record. And if you understand the court of record, it's the king's court. And who is the tribunal in the king's court? The tribunal of the king's court is the plaintiff is the sovereign of the case or it's the trial jury. So in either event, that's the tribunal. It's not the judge. Well, who is the highest of all? It is the grand jury. You see, the grand jury has arbitration powers. They do not have to send a case into the court. They can arbitrate it, work it out, get a contract going, and they can bring back restitution to the injured party and get that person who violated that person to agree to that contract, and they can control that from that level. So they have that authority and the power, and you could see that is being abused in the prosecutor when they try to make deals with people, even before they're even indicted. They'll say, hey, look, just cop out. We'll give you a year, and this way you don't have to go for 12 or 20, okay? And they're putting that pressure on that person that is wrong. They don't have the authority to do that. That's the job of the grand jury. And the job of the grand jury is not to put someone in jail. The job of the grand jury is to find restitution. Now, they will, even after that person is indicted, they will violate the – you see, once an indictment is put forward, it must go forward. But they will intervene, and even in that indictment, and they will go to the other side and say, hey, we'll work your deal out now. We'll give you 3 years instead of 12, okay, if you want to cop out right now. And then they work out the deal, and they plead guilty, and they go through all of that. That's extortion. It's evil, and it's wrong. And that's not his power or authority to do that. Only the grand jury can do that. And so, you see, the grand jury is a court of record. The grand jury is a tribunal, and the grand jury can make conclusions to any case that comes before it, providing the accused and the violated agree. You have to get them to agree. And generally speaking, they probably will agree if you can put a good deal on the table that works for them, because this guy, on one hand, that's going in before the courts, he doesn't have to spend all this money and get lawyers and go through a trial and the stress and the pressure, and he doesn't know what the trial jury is going to do to him. And then the person who's been violated, they don't have to go through that stress either, even though they don't have to pay for the lawyer. But nevertheless, it's a stress, it's time. And they can get satisfaction immediately if we can make an arrangement to reinstate that individual however it is that they were injured.
You've made a good point here. It seems to be begging the question to mention it. Which comes first, the court case? If you were going to have a need for a writ of mandamus, or is a writ of mandamus and then a court case? That was my point, and obviously, for the reasons that you gave, it was done the I'll call it the wrong way. I'm not putting you down anyway.
Right.
But because there was a court case, they were able to dismiss everything and injure you. And that probably, procedurally, is the wrong way if you were going to have a writ of mandamus in the future to go. And that was why I brought it up.
Yes and no, but you see, that's not necessarily true. Our court case was one court case that was going through the process. When we were in the middle of trial, we went over and we opened another court case, which is the filing for the writ of mandamus. We didn't have an avenue to go right back into this through this court case. We had to go and buy a number and get into the system, because that's what they've set up. When you file a writ of mandamus, you have to open up a file, an index file. And even though it is not a trial case, it is really going in for a writ, they will take opportunity because they've already done it. They didn't have the authority to do what they did. And we went up there a second time and stared them down, and we gave them some papers, and we just went up there to say, do you have any questions? Okay? And believe me, the disdain on these people's eyes, I saw they were evil. These people are no good. And this is our appellate court system. Okay? Now, we filed for the Court of Appeals, and we kind of haven't done any movement on that yet, but we did make the filing on this case to take to the Court of Appeals. But we're too busy right now doing what we're doing, so we're letting that set aside for a while before we want to win it here. We win it here, we win it all. So, but
David, what I wanted you to expand on was that fellow from Alaska with the call. That's what I was interested in.
Okay. That's an entirely different subject.
I should have told you that, because I didn't see the other stuff you wrote because I was busy answering other questions.
So that's okay.
I didn't know you were going to go there.
Okay. As let's see, Schaefer Cox was a – are you familiar with the name Schaefer Cox, John?
No, not offhand. Cox I'm familiar with, but okay. Not Schaefer Cox.
Schaefer Cox was a young man and a very wise man. He'd been homeschooled. He'd been all kind of things in Alaska where he grew up. Married a gal from Montana, went up to Alaska and began to feel like a lot of the people on this call feel about how the unnecessary burden of the legal versus the lawful system was impacting them in Alaska. And he's not a belligerent in any way, shape, or form. Only he was a natural leader because he'd been three times to Mount Everest and had been in the wilderness for 6 months involuntarily taking care of himself just with a rifle and no supplies, 200 miles from anybody, and wondered if he was going to make it. I mean, he had a number of experiences that worked on the boats on the water. But anyway, the long and short of it was that he, because of his, I ought to send you perhaps, John, his talk there in Hamilton, Montana. Unfortunately, he's an incarcerated patriot today, but that it takes that sometimes. And I imagine he'll be there, just like you said, for a long time. If you do things wrong, and I'll put that in quotes, according to the powers that be, they find a way to hang your butt, and that's a threat to everyone on this call or anyone who supports the things on this call. But in the midst of that is liberty, and it's a fight. It's not necessarily a fist fight or a fight with arms, although it can become that if the questions and the stress between the people are not addressed. And what they did there in, I mean, he was even protected by the U.S. government on a military reservation from the state authorities at one point. I mean, they took him in as a refuge because he was on the right side of the law.
What was he doing with his phone calling and stuff? Is that what took them off?
They had a liberty. What I think could still be done in every state or every county actually is you set up exactly what they set up there, which was a Liberty Bell response team. These are people who have as much knowledge as people on this call, who have some knowledge of jurisdiction and what's ordinary sense when it comes to the law interfering in people's lives, and they used a cell phone alert to tell people to convene at such and such a place. It could be anywhere in Fairbanks at any time of the day or night, and people would respond. Hundreds or thousands would respond. There's only 30,000 people in Fairbanks. When you have 100 or 1,000 people respond to a police incident that's going down wrong, and there is a patriot that recognizes it as a witness, they hit that button and everybody gets a call and everybody goes there without arms and just goes there with cell phone cameras and so forth, and they stand there and record what's going on, and oftentimes it causes it to stand down. I mean, they would have the sheriff show up at a meeting that had 250 permitted in a room, and they'd have 300 in there, or the fire marshal show up, and the fire marshal and sheriff would stay because they got so interested. I mean, they really were making a difference, positive for the state of Alaska in terms of straightening things out and doing things right.
You know, this sounds like something that the Oath Keepers are trying to set up right now. I don't know. I went to this meeting up on an Oath Keepers. Gerard, you didn't go to that meeting, but this is kind of the thing they were talking about. But go ahead.
I'm sure that it has benefit for what you're trying to do, because there isn't a police officer alive who isn't going to watch his P's and Q's if he's got 30, 40 people show up out of nowhere before he gets to the scene and watching what he's doing to be sure he does things according to law. I mean, that's you don't have to say a thing. All you have to do is just be there.
Right.
You know, with knowledge in your head, not with your, I mean, you know, actually know what the law is, you know.
Right.
Mona, you don't have to speak up necessarily. Pardon me?
Jay?
Didn't they arrest him for child endangerment?
They were going to...
Children?
He had a young child. His wife got frightened. They didn't... I don't know all the details, but he that's what they got him on. I mean, you know, if you start standing up within the common law, even if you're still a novice at it, and you don't know everything about, I mean, the common law, unlike the register or the other law, is a two-edged sword, and so you really have to be wise in the use of it, because it has a lot more penalty than what the lawyers are doing. They want to do, the lawyers want to divide it out so that you just pay a fee and somebody gets off and somebody gets the money. But that doesn't satisfy righteousness. It doesn't satisfy, I mean, you're right. That happened in, to some extent. That's what they got him on. And I think it was bogus myself, but I never met him in person. I've talked to him on the phone. He'd been on the conference call of AUNetwork.tv, and you can read, and you can go back to the archives there and hear some of those calls, in which he was the guest. And, but he's probably gone for a long time. And anybody who's fought for liberty does. I mean, in the American Revolution, you know, they pledged their lives, fortune, sacred honor, and most of the people who signed the document lost everything, their homes, their wives, their children, everything. I mean, this, as John Durash has said here, the people on the other side are playing for keeps, and they will pull out every stop to prevent these common law grand juries from coming into being. But if they ever are established righteously and in humility, they will. We can bring back what God intended for this country. We can bring back liberty for everyone, not just a few who are wealthy. And so it's a good fight. And there and as a Vietnam vet, Purple Heart, I mean, you're going to have casualties. Even as a non-combatant, you can be.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's not altogether bad. I mean, as a previous caller tonight said, I would rather go down standing up than kneel down to some of the things that are going on. What we're experiencing in this country is unacceptable.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely unacceptable. And until we fix our money system, just as John has said here tonight, we're not going to be able to fix anything because everything is denominated money. Your money's fraudulent, folks.
Yeah.
I missed a part of what you say. They arrested him for child endangerment. They ended up getting him on.
Well, his he had a 4-year-old and he dearly loved her and was taking care of her. I mean, I can't tell you the whole story because I don't know the whole story. Mm-hmm. It was in pieces. Do I believe for a minute he was a bad father? No. Do I believe they had a legal charge of child endangerment? Yeah. I know that he had a showdown with a judge, a state judge, and was in the courtroom, and he had at his command more people inside and outside the courtroom who would act on his command than the judge had. So he just asked the judge, which way do you prefer to go here? So those upset the powers that be, and it leads to charges where you have a blind side. Was he an expert in the law like you two guys, the hosts here tonight? No. But he knew what was right, and he was pursuing it with vigor. I think this is men's work, folks. I don't know how many women are on this call, but it takes a lot of stamina. There are very few women who can stand that pressure that we're talking about, and a lot of men can't either.
Well, we've got a lot of women, and they are withstanding pressure. We got a lot of women amongst us, and we may even have more than men. I don't know, but anyway, go ahead.
Well, God created, and I'm going to just share my opinion, and you can throw it out if you need to. Most people do, but God created women with special responsibility of childbearing,
mm-hmm.
and nurturing, and they created, and God created men as protectors.
Mm-hmm.
Women can do it, but not as easily as men, generally speaking. And so when we get those positions reversed, we have women protecting men inside your house. I don't care, out at an event. Where the police are out of line and there's a question of which way to act, I don't know. Do what you can. I'll say that. But you know, criminals don't thieve where there are except in blind alleys. And if you're going to confront someone in a blind alley, you're going to have a big enough person to stop the thief.
Well, that's true. The leadership is usually a man, but there are some women that, let me tell you, have taken the reins. So it's good there too. But generally speaking, you're right.
I would invite your audience to Google Schaefer Cox.
Okay.
That's his name, and view his videos that are still out there on YouTube, because you'll learn.
Is anyone trying to get him out of jail? How long has he been in?
He's in federal custody, and I don't know that answer. I received an email from someone recently with a mailing address. I think he's in Marion, Illinois, in jail now, or in prison, I should say.
But he went away on a separate charge from what he was doing with the phone calls. In other words, they found a way to put him away on
just
something
like,
else.
Just like on this Article 78 and the index number and stuff. Yep.
Yeah,
that's why we won't go into their courts, and no way, we're not pulling no number, anything.
John, I need to ask this question. Is the Article 78 in every state, or
no,
was it by state law?
Not that I know of. I really don't know. I don't know, okay. But I know New York. But it doesn't matter anyway, because other states might use this opportunity because they're evil. And look, they're going to get you on a charge that's real. The charge is called contempt of court. And from their perspective, when you go out and do what they told you not to do, that's a legal charge they're going to get you on, and it's going to happen. Even though the case in itself was fraudulent, that's never seen, and that's an uphill battle.
Let me just throw you a different alternative, because we're talking then about 50 state Supreme Court justices.
Just remember one other thing. The king is going to a court system that is corrupt, that really is a corporate, under a corporate charter. The king is going to a corporation to get justice, and we can't do that. The mandamus is a common law writ, and it belongs in a common law court, and we don't have a common law court in place. So that in itself becomes a problem. That's why we went with the Coroando, because the Coroando doesn't require going to a judge. It's a paper for, it's a writ from the king himself. So that's why we went that route.
I guess I want to ask this question. If Scalia has said it still exists,
yes,
but we can't put it in effect because there's a judge in the way, then, and that would be, you would expect that at a lower court because they're not as learned.
Right.
But if I'm just going to believe that in the 50 states, there's at least one or two Supreme Court justices who recognize that for the common person, there's not the opportunity, the way the court system worked, that he works under and through as a bar member all those years he's worked and everything, but he knows there's a problem, and he's willing to entertain a proper a procedure of some sort to remedy it if it improves his comfort in his disobedience to the rule of law, even though he has to mend fences and compromise at times. I'm going to ask the Lord, by prayer and otherwise, that the Lord Himself begin to give us judges like that.
We will bring them under order by authority, and look at who was it that said this? I think it was Jefferson said, when the people fear the government, they have tyranny. When the government fears the people, they have liberty. And we have to bring this government back to fear. And fear is when mommy and daddy is at home and watching you. And when you get out of line, you're going to get burnt for that. You're going to get chastised for that. You're going to get corrected for that. And when they understand that, you know, we don't care ultimately we do care what's in the hearts of men, but it's irrelevant to us from the standpoint of what's really in their heart, as long as they're behaving. They could be Hitler, they could be Stalin, but if you have control over them and they're behaving because they're afraid, that's fine by us. As far as their soul and their heart is concerned, that's a judgment of God and not of us. And so that's where we got to bring it to, but we can't go into a corporate system and expect to get a constitutional result. That's what we're doing. We win in some of these cases. You know, we won a federal court case only because we played their game. We became a ship at sea. The ship has been damaged, and now they got to repair it. But on the other hand, we also made another case on the jurisdiction. They didn't have subject matter jurisdiction. They didn't have any jurisdiction whatsoever. As a matter of fact, the jurisdiction belonged in the state, and there was individuals that they couldn't give us remedy over because there was a state offense, and there were people from the state, and they were not from the federal government. They weren't a federal agent. Also, they didn't have the ability to deal with this because once that federal agent stepped outside of their cover, under color of law, and was carrying a badge and a gun and utilizing their power under fraud, they no longer had any protection anyway. But the moment they operated under corporate charter, they've already given up their protection of the constitutional veil. So either way, they were in trouble. So we, you know, in this case, we had them for three or four different positions, and then the judge's flesh became part of the case. I mean, that's my perception from the way we wrote it and the way we understood it. And so when the flesh of the judge got lost into the case and he understood, well, if I go this way, I'm now in a liable situation, and I'm not going to do it. We ended up with a confession and from the other side and a whole bunch of things. I don't want to get into all those details. Ultimately, you have to know the game. You have to know where they're coming from. I think we were kind of lucky in figuring it out. We did have some good teachers and people around us that have taught us some of these things. And we were able to get through it. But in the state courts, I think these judges, they're so corrupt and so blind, and they're so used to living off the fat of the land and doing all these corrupt deals right in the open that they're not really seeing us there. And it takes a while before they finally read the case and then understand that, you know, maybe they got a problem here. But then yet they still got the protection of the guys above them, and they're counting on that. They're counting on the protection from the appellate court and the Court of Appeals. They're counting on the fact that we don't have the endurance. They're also counting on the fact that we don't know what the next thing to do is.
Mm-hmm. Let's not forget that state judges, including the Supreme Court Chief Justice, is an elected official, and the federal judges who protect them are not. They're appointed.
And
not only that, they're appointed for life. So their protection is pretty good. But they're still vulnerable because they're electable. We had our Supreme Court Justice, GOP, who was not reelected when he ran. And so that was in Michigan a few years ago.
Right. Well, you do know that's
unusual.
You do know that in the common law court, judges are just traffic cops. They're the magistrate of the court. They don't get
sure,
to make a ruling.
I understand that. Okay.
That's
understand
the big problem we have. Once they gave a judge the ability to judge, that became the big problem. And that's because they just dumbed us down little at a time, little by little. And they trained us in school, and the Bar Association trained all of the lawyers, and they all respond, the judges are lawyers, and they all respond to they owe allegiance to the Bar Association first and foremost. So, and then the court.
The biggest mistake when you're under arms is to put your trust in someone who isn't trustworthy,
right?
And that is going on as we speak. In Benghazi, I have a friend who's. It's legion you can't have a better military than you have people who come out of society who are ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of what we're talking about here, and to have people, you know, every person who takes an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States and the military, says against enemies, foreign and domestic. Who dreams you're going to meet an enemy of the country within the military when you enter the military? So that raises my last question having to do with this call. In what manner is the legitimacy and the election of the common law jury not an old boys club new? A club of friends or something instead of a cross section. Now, state grand juries sort that out by picking allegedly from people who are registered drivers. But
we have thought this out, and we know We are creating a system that does not put a small group of people in charge, and then it could become corrupted. And of course, we have principles. We have an oath that is taken that everyone will abide by the three principles that we have established and the two maxims by which we decide by. And anybody who steps outside of those guidelines, the other 24 in the case of a grand jury can remove that person if they don't obey the rules and honor their oath. And same thing in the trial jury, we will teach them the same thing. The key to what we're doing is we're developing four administrators in every county. That's the key. We're taking over the administrative process. We're not electing grand juries. We're electing the process back into the counties. And ultimately what we're doing through that election is constituting the grand jury in that county and then declaring it to the people through the county clerk by filing it there under miscellaneous. It's a declaration unto all men that this has happened. The other thing is we file it for a memorial in the court, and that's why we sent a copy to the court clerk for filing, and particularly the chief clerk. Now, once that's done, that's an established system, and we take the control of the administrative process. Right now, the administrative process of the grand jury is controlled, at least here in New York State, by the prosecutor or the attorney general. And they control that process, so it's controlled by lawyers. When it comes to the trial jury, that is called out by the judge, and it's under the judge's wing. So the administration and the process and the teaching and the orientation and the book that they receive as their rules and all that stuff comes from lawyers. Lawyers as a judge or lawyers from the prosecutor's office. And it has state, of course, that's all, they're all working for the state. So that's why, of course, there's no way they're going to permit in their rules and they're going to control these people to allow them to go after a judge or a lawyer or anybody that they don't want them or an elected individual, because they control the whole process. They call them and then they dismiss them. And they're never there on their own. They're always an arm of these individuals. We're taking that away by forming the administrative process. That's why we sign our papers. We call it the grand jury on the top, but we're the administrators of the grand jury. Okay, we don't identify ourselves as the grand jury unless we're in that capacity and acting as that grand jury, which isn't often. I mean, we operated in a tent recently, three times in a tent for the same case. It's the case we're talking about and dealing with now. And while we operated inside that tent, we were grand jurists. When the FBI came and we started to question the FBI, then we put on our grand jury hats because now we're in the investigators for the grand jury. And now I'm one of the grand jurists who's going to be sitting on that grand jury that's going to bring it to the other 24, and then we're going to give them all the information. They're going to make a decision. The FBI understood that, and that's why the FBI backed off from us numerous times already. But in any event, we are not the grand jury. We're teaching people. We're not foremen of the grand jury. We're the administrators of the grand jury. And so we need to be the investigators, we need to produce the cases to the grand jury, we need to orientate them, give them the mindset, give them the principles, and we should sit on that grand jury too as often as we can, maybe not all four of us, maybe all four of us, maybe two of us, maybe one of us, maybe none of us. It depends on what's going on. And especially more later, once we get things under control, we won't have to necessarily sit on those, but we will produce the evidence before them, just like a prosecutor would bring the evidence before them. The administrators of the grand jury will bring the evidence before them. And we will always be looking for someone else to be the foreman other than any of us, because we want the people to share in this thing. And you'll always see someone that will pop up that's got a little understanding and knowledge, the ability to lead, the ability to organize, the ability maybe even know common law and understand these principles greater, has a higher integrity value within themselves or whatever the case may be. And you say, that's the guy. We'll make him the jury foreman because he seems to be, capable. Everybody in favor of that say aye, and that's it. The guy's the foreman. If the foreman gets out of line, he doesn't have any more authority anyway than just to really just lead the process and, hang on a minute, let's finish over here before we move over there. Just kind of orchestrate it. And if that person becomes a problem, we can vote him out just like anybody else can in any other thing. Majority rules in that case. None of us will ever sit on a trial jury because I think that would be a conflict of interest anyway, because we've done the investigation. We had and we were very involved in the case before we even brought it into the court. And now if it's got to go to the trial court, all we would be doing is delivering all that evidence to the prosecutor, who then would then take it and produce it before the jury, the trial jury, as the case goes on. And if we expressed things to them, or we went and sat in on a trial jury when we were the investigators, I think that's a problem. It's a conflict of interest. So we can't sit on a trial jury if we were partners of any of those things. So we want to operate in integrity. And again, the key focus of the principles is a sense of honor, a sense of justice, and a sense of mercy. And if all thinking and decision-making is made under those principles, we can't go wrong and we'll be able to go to sleep at night. And, of course, we are guided by two maxims. In order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. And if there's an injured party, for every injury, there must be a remedy. And of course, the crime can't be against the state. It's got to be against the people, one of the people. So that's it. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. It's a very simple thing. But we are putting together sort of a four-hour course that people can tweak it as they want it. But we need to orientate people. We need to show them some films on liberty, make them understand fiction and where the fiction came from and what the value of that fiction is in the UCC and so on and so forth. But it doesn't belong in the people's court where you find common law. And the differences between the courts of equity and the court of common law. And we have to give them a little bit of an education. And, of course, we're going to hammer down on our schools, and our children will be coming through schools, and they'll be prepared for this to be one of the people and to give back to the community and to have honor and justice in mind. So they'll be prepared for that, and there's no reason why, once we capture our schools back, that an eighth grader couldn't walk into any court and handle a case. They should know procedure and process. They should know the political process. They should understand how things work, and they should understand how we were robbed back in 1789. It took them 200 years to complete the robbery, and they're almost done. But in any event, they need to understand that so we don't repeat that again. So anyway, that's my speech on that. Let me just shut off the recorder because we've been going a long time. We'll continue.